using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 2nd of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 506 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to talk about toxic medicine and the toxic bureaucracy that is trying to shut down not just effective therapeutics, but supplements as well. The money behind it. And we're going to talk about how, coincidentally, I've been banned now by Spotify. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You know, you got to give credit to YouTube. At least when they purge you for no reason, they tell you. Same thing is not true of Spotify. I did not realize that the podcast had been taken down until I was notified by listeners. And this happened over the weekend. And I'll just tell you right now, this is something that happened. It's kind of an interesting story with Spotify because I was banned along with everybody else at InfoWars, guilty by association. Just like I was with YouTube. I had no strikes ever. I'd been on YouTube for years, had tens of millions of views on videos. I had several of them, 2 to 4 million views. I'd never had anything taken down. I had had, and it wasn't even a strike, I'd had a warning about copyright infringement on the video that I did exposing the Federal Reserve, talking about It's a Wonderful Lie. You know, because the Federal Reserve is on the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve, 2013. And I made comparisons, some comparisons, to It's a Wonderful Life, because there's a lot of comparisons. I mean, the banker, there's very much like, J.P. Morgan shutting this thing down, orchestrating bank runs, creating a manufacturing a crisis, and then coming to them and doing it in the middle of December. But there was also a great deal of commentary. And there's only a couple of clips, and amazingly enough, I got all the short clips that I use in that video from YouTube itself, from the full movie that had been up for probably a decade and had millions of views. Anyway, that was phony. We knew exactly what that was. But now, after being taken down back in August, it's now been nearly 3 years. It was August the 6th that there was a mass purge. And without any warning, without any strikes against me, everything was taken down from YouTube. At the same time, Spotify canceled the podcast. And I haven't talked about this on Twitter because that's just going to be like blood in the water for these cancel culture people. So I'll just tell you, the audience, what's happening with this. So at that time, Spotify shut it down. But all the rest of the podcast companies continued to accept it, because the way it works is you host it on a podcast provider. In this particular case, it was hosted on Spreaker. And so they blocked it, but everybody else continued to accept it. Now, when Alex blocked me from being able to get my Spreaker account that had my name on it, because he wanted everybody to think that I just disappeared. And I keep getting stuff from people, I didn't know you were still out there. I wondered what happened to you on InfoWars and yada, yada. So he blocked that for about 6 months. During that time, after a couple of weeks, I realized when it looked like they were not going to turn it over. And as a matter of fact, they didn't turn it over. It was somebody inside who then resigned. The last thing they did before they left was gave me control of the podcast. I could go on and on about Alex, but I'm not going to do that today. When I set up, because I wasn't getting it, I set up a new one. I called it The Real David Knight Show. And I put that hosted on Podbean. So now I have two different podcast things. Now that I got the David Knight Show back, I have two of them, and they're broadcasting out to iTunes and to Spreaker and to iHeart and to Google Podcasts and Amazon, all these different places that you go to get it. But understand that they're not hosted. They're not stored on those places. They're pushed out to them. And when I set it up on Podbean, Spotify did not block it, and they didn't block it for 6 months. And I was wondering what they would do about it. Had I been purged simply because guilt by association, or was there something in my content that would cause me to be purged? Because, again, Spotify is one of the most censorious of all these different big tech companies. They're the ones who gave billions of dollars to Joe Rogan and then are trying to control what he has to say. And the management at this point in time has invested so much money in Joe Rogan that they're kind of keeping a lid on these little Nazis and Marxists that are in Spotify. But there's enough of them there that they can ferret out somebody like me as well. And so, as a matter of fact, it was just last week, just before this happened, that you had the press pushing Spotify to do more censorship of podcasts. This is a story from thenextweb.com. Spotify's refusal to moderate content will soon become a nightmare. Oh, see, July 29th, last week. In an interview with Axios, CEO Daniel Ek said that the company exercises no editorial control over its creators. Oh, really? Isn't that interesting? It's news to me. Yeah, it's kind of like Google. We don't censor anybody. Or Twitter. We're not shadow banning anybody. We have a lot of really well-paid rappers on Spotify, too. He said that make tens of millions of dollars, if not more, each year from Spotify. And we don't dictate what they're putting in their songs, either. Well, that's right. If you want to talk about rape and violence and drugs, that's okay with Spotify. If you want to virtue signal about the transgender sodomy crowd, you can do that as well. Just don't question them on their key issues. You know, do not question the integrity of elections. Do not question the necessity of mandated vaccines or question their so-called science on anything. Those are the issues right now, but it'll be anything once they establish this, and they are establishing it very rapidly. And you see the things that they add to the list of do not talk about this continue to expand rapidly. Don't talk about the lockdown. Don't talk about vaccine mandates. Don't talk about vaccine side effects. Don't talk about any of this stuff. And so Axios was saying it's great that Spotify allows creators to express themselves freely, but they'll have to face the music eventually. Platforms can't simply ignore moderating content they host. They may have to issue an outright ban. The problem, though, is wider than this. Spotify simply doesn't have the capacity to scale its moderation efforts. Somehow they found a way to do it for me, though, within a couple of days of this. According to the podcast marketing company Chartable, more than 17,000 new shows were launched every week in 2020. And, you know, I don't get much traffic in terms of videos in these secondary markets. It's very, very small in terms of viewership on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. And actually, the number of views that I get on BitChute now is more than I get by orders of magnitude on the other two, other three places. But it's something that I would have not even paid any attention to when I was on YouTube. So when you look at the video view counts. They really don't count. What counts with this program is the podcast. That's always been where I had the most audience. And I had ranked up, I'd pulled up to, in one ranking from a Talking Point Memos, pulled up to 19 last year. Alex, for example, was at 14. It's closing the gap on him pretty fast. But that's where my audience is. And so this is where they want to focus. Even though it's a very crowded market, We've gotten a lot of listenership out of podcasts, so they want to shut me down there. How do you moderate this much content? They said, well, you need to have huge human workforce along with some advanced and scaled artificial intelligence, especially if you're going to do this quickly. To say that it's a mammoth task is an understatement. But they seem to be able to do it with me. As Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon said, self-censorship, however, if you censor yourself, you're doing the tyrant's work for him. That is exactly right. I will not do any self-censorship. I will not change. I don't care if they shut me down everywhere. I'm going to continue to say what I say. If I've only got a couple of people watching, I will do it even if I have to shut the program down and do it part-time. I'll continue to do it. It won't be as much. I won't be able to do 15 hours a week and more, because I have to earn a living somewhere. If they shut it down, Twitter, for example, has suspended a science writer after he posted results of a Pfizer clinical test. And, of course, this is Alex Berenson, former New York Times science writer, because when he started actually talking about science, when he was skeptical, when he questioned, when he said, show me the data, they get rid of him. And so now you can only find him on Substack and on Twitter. But now Twitter has suspended him. He's been suspended for simply quoting the results of a clinical trial by Pfizer and raising questions over any vaccine mandate. In the meantime, the White House accused both the Washington Post and New York Times of irresponsible reporting on COVID, but surprisingly, Twitter has not suspended those accounts. As a matter of fact, as Jonathan Turley points out, the article that they came after him for was exactly reported by the Washington Post and the New York Times. So the Washington Post, New York Times, and Alex Berenson have the same article and make the same comment, and he gets banned. You see how this works, right? That's what we're seeing everywhere. And, of course, it's not just him. Jonathan Turley has been very good in terms of coming after violations of free speech and free press. But, of course, it's not hard to find them, is it? Unfortunately, it's a target-rich environment. He said, I recently discussed how the Biden administration was actively encouraging corporations to limit speech and to impose vaccine mandates as a type of shadow state. That has always been the plan. I mean, nobody is talking about the New England Journal of Medicine saying that last March, as Trump was locking everything down. The New England Journal of Medicine said, we don't want to do this from the federal government. We don't want to do this by law, because that will invite due process challenges. We want this to be done through corporations, and we can say it's being done by private individuals, and I've talked about that constantly. But nobody else seems to have noticed that. Was always the plan. And I kept having people say, well, you know, you better support Trump because Biden is going to make it mandatory. And I said, yeah, he will, but basically it's going to be the real threat is corporate coercion. That's the real plan. And by the way, why aren't you upset with Trump? Because if he builds it, they will use it and they will come after you. But he built it. The field of schemes from Donald Trump's administration. Twitter's actions against political commentator Dave Rubin is an example of how these companies are now dispensing with any pretense and actively barring criticism of government policies and viewpoints. Well, they've made it very clear. You have the one thing that's good about this is that the Biden administration doesn't try to pretend anymore that they're not involved, that they're not directing the hand of the government. I had to say, look at Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio is telling him, you better cut the people that we tell you to cut. And I said, and they say this isn't coming from the government? They say it's not coming from Republicans as well as Democrats? So Rubin was locked out for a claim of misinformation. Let me tell you something. What you should be concerned about is not misinformation. You should be concerned about the information that you're missing. What is it that they don't want you to know? And when they say you will not talk about this, well, that's a red flag for me to talk about that, because that's exactly where the information, the important information is, the things that they try to shield from you. Whether you're talking about their spy programs and geospatial intelligence, or you're talking about their asymmetric warfare and training against Americans that I was talking about 7 years ago, or you want to talk about their UN Agenda 21, the smart city, all that stuff that they don't want you to talk about now, the vaccine program, that's what you need to be looking at, because that is the epicenter of the storm, the eye of the hurricane that's coming at after us. Rubin said they want a federal vaccine mandate for vaccines, which are clearly not working as promised just a few weeks ago. People are getting and transmitting COVID despite the vaccine. Plus, now they're prepping us for booster shots. A sane society would take a pause. We do not live in a sane society. That was his comments on an article that basically made those points. And so Twitter says you're spreading misinformation. Now, he's questioning authority. That's a very different thing, isn't it? So, as Jonathan Turley points out, you know, we've seen, and I reported this before, the back and forth between Jack Dorsey, Twitter, and Democrat Chris Coons of Delaware, who, as Dorsey said, misleading information, as you're aware, is a large problem, but it's hard to define it completely and cohesively. You know, it's like what the judge said about pornography. Well, I can't really define it, but I know it when I see it. So what he's saying is, you're going to need to define it for me. So Chris Coons is more than happy to do that. He pressed for an explanation of the categories of censored material to prevent people from sharing any views that he considers to be, for example, climate denialism. See, that's also on the list. Why? Because that is the excuse that they were using before to implement everything that they're doing now because of the so-called pandemic. And it's what they're going, they're already returning to that, to lock in what they have done. But it was always, everything that they did to us in 2020 was what they were planning to do to us for decades. Laid out in Agenda 21, given a time frame with the UN 2030 agenda in 2015, along with Davos, talking about the Great Reset. Again, both of those by 2030. So it was always the plan, whether it was going to be the globe was going to turn into a new ice age because of what we were doing with our cars or our barbecues, or if it was going to be that we were going to have the polar ice caps melt. They just did a quick 180 turnaround, and yet it didn't matter that we went from planet's going to freeze to death to the planet is everything's going to melt. Nothing changed in terms of what they wanted, because these are just excuses to do what they wanted to do, just like the vaccine. And now they pull the vaccine out, and now they're going to stick it to get what they wanted. They put in the pandemic, and now they're going to put the climate change back in order to try to hold these gains in place. Anyway, Chris Coons said, we got to go after climate denialism. Apple, for example, there was an app that was on the App Store. And unlike Google's Android platform, Apple has complete control over what apps are going to go on your phone. With Google, you can get them in third-party places. But there was an app that came out, and it was to help people who did not want to get vaccinated. It was called Unject, the unvaccinated. And so they had a dating app there. So if you want to find somebody that is not vaccinated because you would rather not have the fertility issues that are involved with this, and we'll talk about that coming up. There's some new information about that. But if you would prefer to not get their shed toxin, their protein spike, and the mRNA DNA, so if you'd prefer to do that, or if you'd prefer just to use it as an IQ test, they had a website, Unjected, a platform for like-minded humans that support medical autonomy, is how they describe themselves. So Apple removed that, of course. They pointed out in this RT article, other dating apps such as Tinder and Bumble have introduced features to encourage vaccinations, and that's fine. But thou shalt not discourage these injections. We need to have 100% of the people. And I'm telling you, and I'm going to get into this in a moment, I read a guy's analysis, and I think it's perfect. I don't know why it didn't occur to me. Why are they so adamant right now about this? Well, one reason is that as these health issues are manifesting themselves, they want to make sure that there's no large control group of unvaccinated people. That would expose what they have done to us with these vaccines. So that's why the next people to go are the control group. That's why everybody is saying, well, we're past the nice stage. Now we're going to beat you till we stick you. I'm going to beat you with a stick till we stick you with a hypodermic needle. They cannot have a mass group of us who are not going to develop these symptoms. I mean, it's like autism, right? I mean, we've had for years showing that in communities like the Amish, where they don't vaccinate their kids, they don't get autism and a lot of these other issues that have now become epidemic in our children, because we have multiplied an incredible number of vaccines that have been mandated for kids at a very, very, very early age. And so you do have some small control groups. And if they're small enough, they can ignore them, as they have the Amish not vaccinating their kids. But getting back to the Unjected app, one of the things that brought this to their attention, they said, the thing that really bothered them, was the fact that they had added a social feature to general postings. So it wasn't just mapping up people. You know, you'd say, well, I'm not vaccinated, and you could, you know, meet people to date there. But they also added a social feature, and some people were posting information about the vaccines that, of course, if it disagrees with what the pharmaceutical control, the government controlled by the pharmaceutical companies wants you to see, if it counters that in any way, well, then that's misinformation. And so they said, well, we're going to shut you down for misinformation because you've got people who are actually talking and sharing notes about people who've been injured or about concerns that they have with this vaccine. So they tried to respond to that. In response to Google, they removed that social feed from Unjected. But see, the problem is you cannot appease these people. As Doug Wilson said about the transgender people, they don't want you to believe the trans guys. So I'm a girl. He says they don't want you to believe, that guy doesn't want you to believe he's a girl. He's testing you to see if you're a girl or if you're going to stand up to this stuff. That's really what is involved here. You cannot appease these people. We've had to walk a censorship tightrope, said the co-founder, Shelby Thompson. The app also includes a list of businesses that disagree with vaccine mandates. So obviously it has to go. Interestingly enough, PolitiFact tweeted out a job application and said, PolitiFact is hiring. Come join our misinformation team. So they need a little bit of help with their grammar as well, don't they? That's one person said, if only he had tweeted our misinformation fighting team. But no, our misinformation team. And that actually is a more accurate description. One person responded and said, well, in that case, we're going to need you to be a little bit more specific about precisely which department is hiring, since it's unintentionally correct. That's exactly what is happening there. I just want to say before I conclude this on censorship and what happened with Spotify, I just want to tell you the many different places that you can find us. And we haven't listed all these, but I think that we will, because I think it's important that you not just look for us on the big platforms, because the big platforms are going to be where we're going to disappear. And so let me just give you a list to give you an idea, and then we're going to update. We have most of these listed at thedavidknightshow.com, and that's where we have the links to where you can find us in terms of podcasts, in terms of videos. And again, the videos, we will cut out short things anywhere from 2 to 20 minutes from the show. We'll put the full show up there as well, full broadcast. But we have the full show up as a podcast on multiple platforms. And it'll also show where you can find the show live. Trovo, DLive, you get a video feed. And APS Radio and others. We have where you can find the live stream as well. So in terms of audio, but these are the podcasts that are places where you can currently find us. Apple, that's iTunes, Spotify. Spotify is now gone. Cross that off the list. iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Amazon, CastBox, smaller ones that you may not have heard about, Deezer, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, GeoSavin, I guess, J-I-O-S-A-A-V-N, TuneIn, Pandora, Listen Notes, Player FM, all of those are carrying the podcast. Now, the two places where they host it, if you want to go there directly, are Spreaker and Podbean. And Podbean has its own app where you can stream or download the podcast. So for right now, you can still find us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, talk about the Olympics, some headline news before we get into the toxic medicine and other topics that are verboten. Right? Stay with us. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, and if you want to find the news, that is in the upper right-hand corner. They have music as well as news, and you can find the news link to this program up there on the corner. And Travis reminded me I didn't mention aftermath.fm. They also carry the audio live. And they also have an app with archives. And if you want to get to the archives, there is a fee because there's a lot of archives there. And this was this is something that is really kind of Clive Lewis set it up because he's concerned about being shut down as well. And so this is a place where you can go to find archive documents as well as archive programs that he's controlling. That's why I thought it was important to be there as well. So you'll be able to find that at aftermath.fm. Make sure you take a look at thedavidknightshow.com. That's where you'll find all the different links to where the show is. Now, I just have to say, even though the video view counts, because we're not on YouTube, are way down from where they used to be, the podcasts are way up, and I think that's one of the reasons why they are focusing on that aspect of it. Take a look at the Olympics, and I think as we're talking about censorship, Bill Maher is taking it on. And it's good to see some liberals like Bill Maher, Glenn Greenwald, as well as Matt Taibbi, take this on, because this is used to be one of the things that they would hold as in high esteem, a value that they would support. And that's no longer the case. And so it's good to see them come out and take on people with whom they would typically agree with on economic and social issues and go to war with them for now because these other people are now pushing censorship. They said, no, you don't want to do that. You know, even though we're on the same side with the issue, you don't want to use that tactic. And so I respect that. I think that you need to focus on the fundamentals. And we need to be able to discuss these policies. And I think it is a sign of, obviously a sign of weakness to these people, as well as their tyranny. But they know that they can't win an argument, so they have to shut down the other side. But he said this about what was going on with the Olympics. He said it belongs in Stalin's Russia. Let me play a little bit of his monologue about what is happening in the Olympics.
And finally, new rule, please don't make the Olympics into the Oscars. Oh, what's that? They did already? Yeah. You know, back in April, when the Oscars aired, I commented in this space that the theme of that evening was, we dare you to be entertained. Lest your mind waver for a few hours from thinking about the sad things and bad people in the world. Well, thank God we found some of those bad people in the Olympics now, and not a moment too soon. The director of... No, that was sarcasm.
They don't understand that, or comedy.
The director of the opening ceremony was fired hours before, where did we, before the event, because they found out there was a Holocaust joke in a comedy routine he did decades ago. Well, you know, context is everything. Obviously, it didn't strike people as beyond the pale at the time. Young people have to stop flattering themselves that they're Nostradamus and would have foreseen, had they been around then, everything that's unacceptable now. And for further context, Mel Brooks wrote one of the most successful musicals of all time around the song Springtime for Hitler.
The producers.
Why do we allow the people who just want to bitch to always win? Days before that firing, the opening ceremony's musical director, was also forced out because someone dug up an interview with him from 1994 where he admitted to bullying classmates as a child. As a child. Remember when your teacher used to try and scare you by saying, this is going to go on your permanent record? Yeah. No longer an empty threat now. And the creative director of the entire shebang of the whole Olympics got shit-canned because he once made a fat joke in a private conversation. This is called a purge. It's a mentality that belongs in Stalin's Russia. How bad does this atmosphere we are living in have to get before the people who say cancel culture is overblown admit that is in fact an insanity that is swallowing up the world?
Yeah, absolutely. He finally got some applause, but not much of it. You notice how they jumped in immediately. Yeah, they got kicked out because he said something we didn't like. Yay! And he goes, where did we get this audience? Yeah, exactly. How did we get this country? Where did we get this country? Well, I know precisely where it came from. It came from the government schools. That's the purpose of the government schools, was to create this kind of Marxist mob that's now running through the streets. And it is exactly a purge that belongs in Stalin's Russia. The curriculum that's being taught in the schools is something that belongs in Russia. As a matter of fact, that's where it came from. I've got an article here we're going to get into after the Olympics. One lady who has taken this on in California, a registered Democrat, who has always supported the Democrat Party, she is an immigrant from Russia. And she says, this is exactly, there's these dog whistle terms that are in there in English. I'd already seen these in Russian. She said she started contacting other Russian immigrants, and they were equally concerned about this. Americans don't realize it, but that's precisely what this is. That's not hyperbole. It's not even an analogy when he's using that. That's how he's using it, as an analogy. No, it is by design a Stalinist purge. So yeah, young people have to stop flattering themselves that they're Nostradamus and would have foreseen, had they been around back then, everything that is unacceptable now. And he talks about your permanent record. Could it be a coincidence that DARPA and the intelligence community's life log. Remember that? Life log. We'll record everything about you. That's a permanent record, isn't it? It's pretty creepy. That total information awareness from DHS and the intelligence agencies that really were the ones behind not only the creation of the social media companies, but the creation of the Internet. Brainchild of a DARPA psychologist back in the 1960s, J.C.R. Licklider. And so, yeah, the day that they started getting a lot of, they said, well, we're going to have total information awareness, and I got a program called LifeLog, which is going to record everything about you on the Internet. People said, I don't think we want the government doing that. That's kind of creepy and Orwellian. The day they shut it down was the day that Facebook opened up. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. Yeah, it is a permanent record. They will not be flushing everything down the memory hole. Their memory hole is very selective. Just, again, the type of stuff that they don't want people seeing. That will be flushed down the memory hole. But everything that they believe that they can use against each and every one of us will remain there. So, the Olympic Games ceremony director was fired for a comedy act that included a Holocaust joke after footage surfaced from the 1990s. Again, as he pointed out, you know, springtime for Hitler, the producers, Mel Brooks producers. We can't have comedy anymore, though. Comedy is dead. As I point out, I mean, just that document that I went through, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday last week, where I said, look at these humorless, robotic descriptions of what a meme is or trying to define for these people who are going to be implementing this, the practitioners, as they call them. They were going to be implementing this censorship. They were so afraid of humor. And they understood that humor was a weapon. They quoted Saul Alinsky talking about that. But they didn't know how to deal with it other than just shutting it down. It was too hot for them. Just take a look at everything else that is happening at the Olympics. Today we have the man who, after he got too old to lift weights competitively, he's now a 43-year-old weightlifter, so then he transitioned into a woman so he could compete effectively. I've talked about this many times. When you look at the 1970s and Bobby Riggs, who was at one point in time in his 20s, he was rated number one in the world. And then in his 40s, he started trolling Billie Jean King and others. Actually, I forget the tennis player that he beat soundly. She was ranked right up there, like number one, along with Billie Jean at the time. And he skunked her. And so then Billie Jean King challenged him. And from many accounts, he threw that. And then later, you had a third battle of the sexes. And the man won that handily as well. So here we have this guy, 43-year-old, washed-out Olympic competitor weightlifting. Now he wants to compete as a woman. That will happen today, so don't miss it. Well, actually, you do want to miss that. It's just a disgusting low point for this. And we look at the way that they are pushing this. This is a guy who is a race walker, who in 2020 became the first openly transgender man to compete against women. And he said, this moment is incredibly significant for the trans community, for our representation in sport, and for all trans people and non-binary kids to see themselves and know that they can compete in sports better than women, as a matter of fact. So we see that at the same time this is happening, the sports organizations are coming after women, angry that they're not wearing skimpy enough clothes. So they put men in to compete against them. And then when they have women out there, and I hope we don't combine these two. I do not want to see this this guy competing as a woman. I do not want to see him in skimpy clothes. They have the Norwegian women's beach ball hand team. And they said, you know, we don't like the sexism. We don't like being used as sex objects. So we're not going to wear the bikini bottoms, which are really more like thongs. We're not going to wear those. We're going to wear shorts. And so they had a fine levied against them. The European Handball Federation insisted. They fined them 1,500 euros, which is about $1,783. They insisted that they wear mandated bikini bottoms at the European Beach Ball Handball Championships in Bulgaria instead of the shorts. And if you go back and you look at the Wall Street Journal article, it kind of gets right to the bottom of it. In 2004, no, that was not intentional, then FIFA president Sepp Blatter, that's unintentional too, I guess. Anyway, I shouldn't laugh at his name. Maybe that's a perfectly legitimate name in Germany or something. Had an idea for making women's soccer more exciting for spectators. Tighter shorts. He said to the Swiss newspaper, Sonntags Blick, he suggested that soccer might follow the lead of volleyball, where the women's uniforms are more revealing than the men's. And he's subsequently been banned for for ethical violations, including taking bribes and bonus payments. So there you go. Cut from the same cloth as Epstein, Donald Trump, and the rest of them. Tokyo Olympics rating is now down big time, 42% down overall. So I guess you're going to see a lot more calls for smaller uniforms. It's going to be the bottom line. Olympic gold is silver. And this is coming from Schiff Gold. Yeah, that gold medal is actually a silver medal because gold is too valuable for them to be handing it out for free like that. He points out the value. It's they're silver medals that are plated with about 6 grams of gold plating. He said the value of the medal in a 556-gram Olympic medal is a little over $800. That's nothing to sneeze at. But since it's 556 grams at today's price, gold at $1,800 an ounce, they would be valued at over $35,000 each. He said, as it is, that 6 grams out of the 556 grams of that Olympic medal, the 6 grams that is gold, is $360. And he says, if you compare that to the 2018 medal, gold was only worth about $250. Now it's worth $360. He says, this, my friends, is why you buy gold. Peter Schiff, as a gold proponent, of course, as always, he points out that the medals are also 30 grams lighter than were handed out in the Winter Olympics in 2018. According to the Olympic records, the only time gold medals were purely made of gold was during the St. Louis Games in 1904 and the London Games in 1908. The medals were much smaller, and the average price of gold in 1904 was only $18.96 per ounce. So it's gone up about a factor of 100, because it's not that gold has gone up, it's that the value of our fiat currency has gone down by a factor of 100. It's less than 1% of the purchasing power that it used to have. And it's losing even that 1% is evaporating very, very quickly in an escalating way. He said the medals being handed out at the Tokyo Olympics are junk. He says, I mean literally junk. The folks planning for the 2020, now it's, you know, what we're seeing now in 2021 is actually the 2020 Olympics. They're calling it the 2020 Olympics, I guess. They collected enough silver, gold, and bronze, that's copper and tin, from e-waste to make all the medals for the games. The Olympic Planning Committee collected 9,000 pounds of silver, 67 pounds of gold, and 6,000 pounds of bronze. They did it by collecting broken down electronic devices and extracting the precious metals from them. Let's take a quick look at headline news. We've got, they're lowering the hammer on Kevin McCarthy right now, because he went to an event. Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader for the Republicans from California, he went to an event in Tennessee, Republican congressional delegation dinner in Nashville. And at that dinner, he was handed a very large, oversized gavel adorned with the words, "Fire Pelosi." And unfortunately, he made a joke, because you're not allowed to make jokes in Stalinist America. In Soviet America, we do not make jokes. So he joked, he said, well, it'll be really hard when they gave him the gavel with the words, "Fire Pelosi." He says, when we take back the House, it'll be real hard not to hit her with a gavel when she hands it back to me. So for that, you've got the cancel mob all over him, as well as the cancel Democrats all over him, demanding that he apologize or that he resign. A threat of violence to someone who was a target of the January 6th assassination attempt from your fellow Trump supporters is irresponsible and disgusting. No, that characterization of January the 6th and that lack of humor is what is disgusting. Several Democrats said things like that. Ted Lieu, you need to apologize for your statement or resign. Eric Swalwell called McCarthy a would-be assailant. Now, for context, Eric Swalwell is the guy who threatened all American gun owners with military violence. I think he should resign. He's also somebody who got caught in a Chinese communist espionage honeypot. But, of course, nothing that he does is a problem. Nothing at all. Yeah, this guy who threatened to kill all gun owners with his overwhelming military superiority, because that's what they were able to do in Afghanistan and Iraq and all these other places where asymmetric warfare is underway, right? They're so effective in all that stuff. They think they can try it here. No, it is mutually assured destruction, but I think it's exactly what they would like to do. They are the ones who want to have a civil war. And you can tell that from the way that they're dividing this country in one issue after the other. If we didn't have enough division already by dividing people by sexual preference, by skin color, all of these different things, now they add vaccines as well. They want a civil war. They want a race war, or they want a vaccine war, whatever. This is the article I was referring to earlier, the Soviet immigrant. A registered Democrat issues a stark warning about critical race theory. This is on WND.com. Alina Kaplan, a registered Democrat from California. Politico describes her as the, quote, kind of suburban mom who made Joe Biden president, unquote, and that's what makes her opposition to the Golden State's ethnic studies curriculum stand out. Kaplan, an immigrant from the former Soviet Union who co-founded the Alliance for Constructive Ethnic Studies to fight the radical critical race theory curriculum, said the language in the controversial package reminded her of the kind of schooling she got before she left the USSR at the age of 11. She said, I got a stream of emails about how crazy this curriculum was, so I started reading it, and I got this really weird feeling, a sense of something about this that feels familiar. We would call it deja vu. So she said the Marxist-Leninist indoctrination has already begun. All of a sudden, I was reading the same concepts, the same language, but in English this time. And the guiding principles of the California Ethnic Studies Model Curriculum. She reached out to other Soviet immigrants who confirmed to her that, yes, indeed, this is the same stuff being reflected in the different iteration. The ethnic studies model curriculum has been a political football for years in California, but now they have moved this well into the scoring territory, and they've scored many times with it. Explicit references to critical race theory and neo-Marxism in the critical race theory, she said it is a subjective Marxist concept that grew out of a school of legal thought from the 1960s. It holds that Western society is built on systemic racism, that the issues of race must be viewed as a conflict between oppressed and oppressor. Again, they started doing this in the 1960s, and you had the Marxist organizations like the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers, others of that. He did not invent white privilege. Somebody else came up with white skin privilege, but he popularized it a great deal, and of course, Bill Ayers, a Marxist terrorist, stopped bombing buildings, and he went into education so he could push white privilege. He's been very successful at that. But they started doing this oppressed versus oppressor on the basis of race in the 1960s because they saw that that was a wedge that they could use here in America. They were not getting traction here like they did in Europe in terms of talking about different economic classes. So they wanted to create different racial classes and increase the animosity between skin colors, because we're all just one race. The whole idea of different races is a construct of Darwin and the evolutionists, who don't believe that we are all created in the image of God. They don't believe that we're all descended from Adam, or more recently from Noah. They believe that these different races evolved independently of each other in different ways. And if you look at their doctrine, depending on what race the ranker is, they will rank, they look at three major divisions, Caucasian and Asian and Black. And so they will rank these three depending on who they are. They'll put their group at the top, and then they'll put the others at the bottom. But we're all the same race. As I said many times before, I like the way Ken Ham put it. He said the difference, you know, we're all human race, right? The difference is which direction we're racing. It is about nations, tongues, and tribes. It is not about skin color. To Kaplan, there were other dog whistles in the ethnic studies curriculum, aside from just the critical race theory framework. She said the term true democracy really stuck out, because that was something that they used over and over and over again in the Soviet Union's textbooks when she was growing up. Again, she got out of there when she was 11, but she'd already been exposed to all of this, this idea, this Marxist thought of true democracy. She said, true democracy is a Marxist term that refers to the abolition of private property. She said, what is this doing in an ethnic studies curriculum? Never could we have imagined, she and the other Soviet immigrants who escaped that, never could we have imagined that decades later, the same ideology and concepts that we had escaped would show up all over the place in America. And again, this is Rod Dreher when he talked about title, Solzhenitsyn, Live Not by Lies. He wrote a whole book on it, and he said, I started doing this because I was notified by a lot of people whose parents had escaped communism, and they were freaking out because they said, look, it's here. Same terminology, same tactics, same brainwashing tactics. All of this cancel culture, everything about it is pure Marxism. Politico noted that Kaplan is, quote, representative of Democrat-leaning or politically moderate suburbanites interviewed by Politico in six different states, all of which but one were won by Biden. They are up in arms over the school system's new equity initiatives, which they argue are costly and divisive, encouraging students to group themselves by race and to take pro-activist stances, wrote Politico. And again, I'll just remind you, equity is not equality. Equality is talking about equality of opportunity. Equity is talking about forced equal results. And it is about taking everything from you, all of your liberty, your independence, your ability to compete based on merit, and it's going to dole everything out to you like children on allowance. That is the essence of communism. That is how they control people. All of this, all the Great Reset, all the UN 2030 agenda, critical race theory, the Project 1619, the race war they're manufacturing, that is all Marxist. It's all Marxist. And it rests on a foundation of postmodernism. The idea that there is no absolute truth. It's antithetical to religion. That's why they attack religion so much. These are the people who can recognize a Trojan horse when they see one, because they know the ingredients. She said, I firmly believe that if the vast majority of Californians and Americans knew about this and about the content of this type of curriculum, this would not be happening. We would not be having this conversation, she said. So how is this rolling out for us, right? We had, when the Democrats were running their primaries, you remember we had a lot of Democrats who were signing on to universal basic income. Yang was the darling of people, these globalist elitists like Elon Musk, gave him a lot of money, because Elon Musk is not on our side, folks. You know, forget about all the cheerleading that you heard from Alex Jones for years. I think Alex Jones has finally flipped on him because it's become so obvious that he has to. But you know, for the longest time, worshiping this guy, because he would come out and he would say things like, well, you know, the whole point of what we're doing right now is, is to kill all of you or to take over your minds or whatever. You know, he would talk about transhumanism in a frank way. But then he would run companies that were doing it. And so he was funding, along with a lot of these other Silicon Valley neo-Marxists, he was funding universal basic income through Yang heavily, because this is communism. And now we have Ilhan Omar, her father, a Marxist from Somalia, who lied in order to get into the U.S. He was a government official in Somalia, a Marxist, open Marxist, and yet he said, because it is asked on all these immigration papers, if you are Marxist, he lied to get in, brought her and the family in, and she is now embracing that same kind of Marxism. Surprise, right? New guaranteed income bill that she has proposed would send most people in the U.S. $1,200 per month. When this is being done by the Democrats, we're saying, look at how insane this is. I mean, they're coming up with one initiative after the other, multi-trillion dollar initiatives, and everybody's totaling this up. You realize it's tens of trillions of dollars? You know, you look at the price tag for what Bernie Sanders was doing, or Elizabeth Warren, or Joe Biden, or Kamala Harris. They were competing against each other. Now, one of them would have $40 trillion, with a T, dollars worth of government programs versus, you know, 50 from another one or something. And universal basic income was a big part of this. And yet, Comrade Trump implemented this through the stimulus checks. And that's where the training began. Because, see, if that had been done by Biden or by Obama or by Hillary Clinton, everybody would have called it what it was, communist dog training. And that's exactly what this is. But now she calls it the Support Act. It would create a $2.5 billion grant program to fund local pilot programs and guaranteed income. That's how the federal government does this type of thing. They take worthless fiat currency being generated by the Federal Reserve. They shower it on individuals who will do what they want. This is what Trump did with the lockdown. That's why I traced this back 506 days to March 13th, 2020. The executive order for a national state of emergency showered them with money, the same thing that now Ilhan Omar wants to do with a bill. And part of that eventually became stimulus checks and other things. And now you've got an Arkansas judge ordering that unemployment stimulus checks must continue despite 40,000 vacant jobs in the state. So you had the governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, and the Republicans say, we're going to stop this money that is flowing out of the federal government. It's free money for everybody because, no, but everybody is staying home. And it's shutting down the economy. That's the plan. Why is that happening? Well, again, that began with Trump. He continued it over and over again. And it's being continued and expanded a little bit by Biden. And now you have a judge, even after Republicans oppose it now because Biden is president. They didn't oppose it when Trump did it. But now they oppose it because Biden is president. And you have a liberal judge in Arkansas ordered the state to resume the federal pandemic unemployment benefits that began with Trump just 1 month after they expired. Yet another glaring example of why there is a huge gap in unemployment claims between the red and blue states, despite Arkansas. And forget about the color stuff. It makes me angry to see them using red. Again, that's another Marxist tactic. To relabel other people with pejorative terms and or things that are actually what you are, okay, to project your red Marxist flag onto other people. I will not fly that red Marxist flag. If the appropriate federal authorities reject such a reinstatement, the state will immediately provide proof of such communication to the court. In other words, what this judge is saying is, we've got all this free money flowing out of Washington from Trump, and now Biden is going to extend it. And you're not going to stop that. Now, he said, if the federal government stops the money, you will notify me. Otherwise, you don't have the authority to do this. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like judicial tyranny? Because that's exactly what this is. In May, the governor of Arkansas announced that the state would end its participation in the unemployment programs on June 26th. He rightly claimed, and this is commentary from Zero Hedge, but I agree, that it actually interferes with the ability to fill more than 40,000 vacant jobs in the state. There are currently 69,000 vacant, unemployed Arkansans. So they got 40,000 jobs that are open, and they got 69,000 people who don't have a job. But they got a check from the federal government, from Trump and Biden. Plaintiffs in the lawsuit argued that the governor, Hutchinson, lacked the legal authority to end the state's participation in the program. This is a repudiation of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. It is an upholding of judicial supremacy in the extreme. Listen to the argument again. The judge who shut this down acknowledged that the program was voluntary. But he said, I've got serious doubts that the governor and the director of workforce services in Arkansas were acting within the scope of their duties when they canceled the aid. So it's voluntary. They're the executive branch, but they can always come up with a prevarication just as they did with Trump. Sorry, you can't control immigration border. We're not going to allow you to do that. You can't get rid of DACA, an executive order from the previous administration. We're not going to let you do that. It's absolutely amazing. But this is the judge deciding what the governor can and cannot do. Meanwhile, as they move forward with this, social engineering and the money that flows out of Washington, and again, we all know, just think about this, forget about Trump for a moment, and you know from looking at the way they control education, the way that they have controlled highway bills, I mean, just go back to Nixon, for example, and look at the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. Now, clearly, the federal government had no authority to set speed limits anywhere. That's usually not even set on most roads. It's set locally, right? There are some state roads and things like that where they set the speed limit. Nixon said you're going to set the speed limit on the interstate to 55 miles an hour, or you're not going to get any more money from Uncle Sugar, right? That's the way they do everything. They say you're going to let men, males, biological males, into the women's dressing rooms and restrooms, or you're not going to get any more money from Uncle Sugar. It's always about the money. That's how you get people to do what you don't have the authority to do. You bribe them. Everything that's being done, and that's how they have set up this structure, is to bribe the states to do what they don't have the authority to command. And we're going to see that in spades as we roll through this medical tyranny as well. And so you have in this infrastructure bill, 2,700 pages of it. What is in it? Well, we don't know. Just how much of this is even going to reflect on infrastructure? Because they did this in secret. Pull up the picture of the guy holding Travis. This is a bipartisan so-called infrastructure bill, 2,700 pages long. It's a Breitbart article. They show an aide dutifully wearing his little Fauci and holding a massive stack of papers. Look at that. Zoom in on that picture of him holding those papers. It was being written in secret for months, outside the normal legislative process. It's supposed to happen in relevant committees of jurisdiction. These sources made the unauthorized leak of the draft text to Breitbart out of concern that the murky, secretive process behind the bill may have led to widespread corruption throughout its nearly 3,000 pages. So to put this in perspective, and you can see that from the size of this, right? A 2,700-page legislation printed out. Now, the average Bible has 1,200 pages. I would say that because you can see that this stack is much bigger than a stack of Bibles. I mean, the print is probably larger than you would see in most Bibles, because that would represent about five or six stacks of Bibles, typically as I see them. So I don't know. I mean, the average is supposedly about 1,200 pages, and this is 2,700. It looks like more than two Bibles stacked in his arms right there, way more. But to give you an idea of how they're doing carve-outs and pork bills for these Republicans who've signed on to it, and the Republicans who have signed on to it are very suspect to start with. You got Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, and you've got the two senators, Tom Tillis and Richard Burr from North Carolina, to know that these are the people who are the lead Republican negotiators on this tells you that this thing reeks to the high heavens. I'll just tell you, Tom Tillis, I haven't said this for a while, I'll just mention it again. Being from North Carolina, I know his etymologies, shall we say, of being a senator. There was a guy who had been, Republicans had been in the minority since the end of the Civil War, since Reconstruction. And they got their first Republican majority in 2010 because of Obama. Obama carried North Carolina in 2008. 2 years later, the buyer's remorse was so bad that Republicans won every statewide election and won both the House and the Senate, state House and Senate, for the first time since the Civil War. The only thing that didn't change was Congress, because if you set up the jurisdictions, if you set up the gerrymander of the jurisdictions for the Senate, you control who wins it. It's just that simple. However, 2010 was a census year, and with the new majority, the Republicans were able to redraw the lines, and then they did, and then everything changed to their favor the next election, 2012. So, when you see what is happening with the jurisdiction, you see that this is a key thing for the Democrats to take over. They want to be able to do redistricting from Washington. That's what Pelosi wants to do, because she knows that that will be the way that you control forever the Congress. But they've cried foul with that. They've had lawsuits, even though that was something that they did for 130 years. They knew exactly how powerful that was. And when the other people were doing it, they did a lawsuit to try to shut it down. Well, the reason I mention all that is because there was a guy there, Skip Stam. I knew him personally. He was a rare man of integrity in politics, had a great deal of integrity, and he had led the minority there. As soon as they got the majority, they took Tom Tillis, who had, I think, was only on his second term there, and Skip Stam had been there for a long time. And they put Tom Tillis, they catapulted him and made him Speaker of the House. And so the guy who'd been head of the minority for a very long time and helped them to get the majority. And one of the first things that he did was to push for toll roads. So his involvement in this infrastructure bill is very troubling. His involvement in the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, is also very troubling. That is something that has been used quite a bit by Republicans. They go to these holiday resorts that are run, these conventions that are run by ALEC, and they're presented with some legislation to take back home, and it's all model legislation. And so you just put the name of your state at the top, and you sign the bottom and introduce it. And it is legislation that's being run by the corporations that are essentially in control of the Republican Party, as opposed to the corporations in control of the Democrat Party. And it's the same type of thing we saw with Richard Nixon with the war on drugs. The UN had created the war on drugs, the schedule of four different levels of drugs to be prohibited, and had put all the drugs in those things. They'd done it 10 years earlier, 1961 and 1971. Richard Nixon just put United States up at the top of it, signed his name at the bottom, said, "This is my drug war." No, it's a UN drug war, always has been. We see that happening with the Smart Cities Agenda, the UN 2030 Agenda, all of these different things. They create the agenda for what they want these people to do with climate change, and then they push it out through these politicians who put their name on it. So Tom Tillis comes from that tradition. And then, of course, Richard Burr, this guy is involved. He's been caught with his hand in the till over and over again in terms of insider trading and other stuff like that. So the fact that the two of them are lead Republican negotiators, the fact that you got Lisa Murkowski, who has gotten a large carve-out for an Alaska highway, and, of course, the same thing is happening there in North Carolina. The Interstate Route 85 in Greensboro, North Carolina, to the interchange at Interstate 95 in Dunn, North Carolina, that's also on there. Same thing is being done with another Republican, Bill Cassidy, in Louisiana. They are putting in carve-outs there, creating this thing in secret, 2,700 pages. Nobody's going to have enough time to read this. They're going to rush this thing through. And who knows what else is in there besides stuff, pork barrel projects for interstate places. And, of course, there's a large amount of this is going to be put in for tearing down interstate overpasses that bypass a community, because that's racist. And then once the traffic starts going through the community, they're going to start screaming bloody murder. There's too much traffic. So then they'll do road diets and road calming, you know, speed bumps and narrowing the lanes to try to reduce it. So this is going to be anti-infrastructure. They're going to spend a great deal of money on electric charging infrastructure. And I've talked about that last week. As a matter of fact, I've got an update here from a listener, another data point about what's going on as California banned those computers, and I compared them last week to what is the energy usage of a Tesla, for example, that they love so much, and it's amazing. Orders of magnitude more energy being used by each and every one of these cars, but then they ban a gaming computer, which uses a tiny fraction of that. All in the name of green politics. And that really is what green politics is about. It's about bait and switch. It's about rewarding their friends and punishing their enemies. The U.S. has now sued the state of Texas over Greg Abbott's order restricting the transport of migrants. Again, this is another federal judicial supremacy move. And it is also exactly the opposite of what these people have been arguing. Throughout the 4 years of Trump, all these people came up with the sanctuary cities. That was okay, right? It was okay to defy, for a city, to defy the federal government's control of immigration. And that is something that has been turned over. This is not based on the supremacy clause. No, it's based on the fact that the government, the federal government, is to control and set the policy for the borders. It's just that simple. You can have sanctuary cities that protect unborn babies. You can have sanctuary cities that protect the Second Amendment because, you know, the Second Amendment, for example, is specifically prohibited from the federal government doing anything about that. And so these people are in alignment with the Constitution. And the people who protect innocent life are in alignment with the principles of America, with the Declaration of Independence, and more importantly, with the principles of God. But these people who were talking about sanctuary cities, they always said, well, we can set up a sanctuary city in defiance of the delegated powers that have been given to the federal government. We can set up our own sanctuary city. Now they're saying just the opposite. Now they're saying a governor cannot protect the border of Texas because the federal government sets that kind of policy. See, they don't believe any of this stuff. Again, this is simply a prevarication, an argument. And they are free to do a complete 180 to get the results that they want. All these legal prevarications about how President Trump didn't have the power to do this or do that, now President Biden has that power. This is what we're seeing everywhere. So the Department of Justice, and by the way, the Department of Justice is the department under Obama's executive branch, that came up with DACA. They said, we're going to defer enforcement. We're going to defer action for childhood arrivals. That's what DACA means. In other words, they're not going to enforce the law. That was put out by the Department of Justice. Now they're going, the Department of Justice is now going to sue the state of Texas over an order restricting illegal migrants' transportation. They claim that Abbott's executive order, issued last Wednesday, violates the Federal Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, causes injury to the U.S. and to individuals whom the U.S. is charged to protect, jeopardizing the health and safety of non-citizens in federal custody. Oh, really? Well, they're not really too concerned about health issues when they allow people to come in, large number of them unvaccinated. They don't care about that. Boy, they really do care in every way. If you get on a plane, they want to know your vaccination status, mask, and so forth. But they don't care about people who are unvaccinated, who don't have any intention of getting it, as long as they're illegal aliens. Take a look at what is happening when we talk about the corruption of the judiciary and talk about the corruption of the Department of Justice. Remember that as Trump was putting together his transition team of a lot of globalists and corporatists who are going to help him enforce the globalist agenda, because that's what it was. He only appointed one person who aligned with his and a cabinet position who aligned with his campaigns. That was Scott Pruitt at the EPA. And he let the Marxists hound him out of Washington, D.C. But everybody else that he put in, from Mnuchin to Gary Cohen to Rex Tillerson, all these people, as well as all the generals and all the Goldman Sachs bankers, they were all globalists. But as he was putting that together, you had Obama meeting with Eric Holder talking about how their focus was going to be on district attorneys and state attorneys general, getting them elected. And the money coming from all that was going to be provided by George Soros. George Soros spent a lot of money on local district attorneys as well as on state attorneys general. And he had, for example, in San Antonio, he spent millions of dollars. I think I'm going from memory, so I might not be exactly, but I think it was $3 million he spent on a local district attorney race there. And whenever you had somebody, the guy that he was spending the money against, the guy who was the incumbent, was able to win by pointing out to people there that this money was coming from George Soros. That's what he attributed it to, being able to push back against that massive amount of funding. That is just unbelievable, the amount of money that was poured into that local district attorney race by George Soros. You want to know why? Take a look at what's happening in San Francisco. District attorney there, a Marxist, an avowed Marxist, Chesa Bowden, I guess, was bought and paid for by George Soros, a career criminal out on parole who should have been behind bars for the rest of his miserable life, writes the National Sentinel, had been rearrested, finally, on manslaughter charges after he killed two people last week in a stolen vehicle. Troy McAllister, parolee accused of killing San Francisco's pedestrians, faced possibility of three strikes life sentence in an earlier case, but he got 5 years under Bowden. And that's not the only time this has happened. When you look at what is happening in San Francisco, what he has done in terms of the rampant shoplifting that you see there, that's where all these pictures of people going in, being able to steal $900 at a time, and defending not only the shoplifters, but also drug dealers. As Zero Hedge points out, San Francisco's broad daylight retail heists have shocked the nation in their brazenness. They've triggered the closing of stores such as Walgreens. I mean, even the big box retailers funded by Wall Street cannot survive in this kind of an environment. And it's caused the shortening of hours from retail giants such as Target. 44% of the city is planning to move out, 80% of them citing out-of-control crime. And again, this is a guy that Soros wanted in, spent millions of dollars to get these types of people in as district attorney. This is not the only place we have Soros DAs. But the shoplifters have a defender in San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Bowden. And so do drug dealers. The only problems that Chesa sees are the victims. Talking to the New Yorker in an interview, there was a viral video that you've probably seen, came out in June, of a guy stuffing stuff that he's stealing in Walgreens into a trash bag and then riding his bike through the store, unencumbered on his way out. Bowden told the New Yorker, he says, "When I watch that video, I think about five questions that people are not asking that I think they should." He doesn't have a problem with it at all. Listen to what he says. Is he drug addicted? Is he mentally ill? Is he desperate? Is he part of a major retail fencing operation? What's driving this behavior? And is it in any way representative, because it was presented as something that is symptomatic? Well, it is symptomatic. And it is systemic that this is happening. But, you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe the devil made me do it, right? Remember Flip Wilson? It's never his fault. Right? It's never Geraldine's fault. It was always the devil that made him do it. So, you know, maybe it's just the devil making him do all this stuff. But we know the devil that Chesa Bowden serves, don't we? Soros. And again, when you look at this, the question is, why did Trump not investigate Soros? Because he's in on it. He didn't do a single thing. He did nothing. And in many cases, even like that, he wouldn't even talk about that. Now, you got Viktor Orban in Hungary. They kicked Soros out. Why do we allow Soros to rig our elections with millions of dollars with his foundation, to put people like Bowden in a charge? The question that doesn't occur to him is whether the thefts are illegal. Who cares? We don't care about that. Or whether or not continued unpunished crime is seriously disruptive to any society of lawful order. Well, of course it is. And that's why Soros is spending millions of dollars to put people like this guy in charge. Bowden embraces the logic of looters from Black Lives Matter over the summer. He said, if Walgreens has insurance for certain goods or they expect a certain amount of loss, if they would rather not risk lawsuits or escalations to violence, then maybe that's something we should know about. In other words, they got insurance. Who cares? Well, the problem is that the insurance companies are not a charity. They're not going to operate at a loss. And if they are applying for insurance reimbursement for all this theft, the insurance companies know what Bowden is doing. They know what San Francisco is doing, and they know what this environment is. And the insurance is going to get so high that's going to put them out of business in that location. He sounds like a sleazy defense attorney, writes the article at Zero Hedge, crafting a case for a scummy defendant with nothing else for his defense other than to blame the victim. Worse still, he does the same thing for hardened drug dealers in the country illegally. Bowden noted in his reply that many of the drug dealers had been brought to the U.S. by human traffickers, or they were, in a sense, victims themselves. He's excusing the Honduran drug dealers, said Greenberg. He's not holding them accountable. He's greenlighting it. As a result, we see that California's faith in gun control has now slipped a little bit, but at least it slipped a little bit. 56% now instead of 60% 3 years ago. So it's just a little bit of a slip. So it dropped from 60 to 56% the people in California that believe stronger laws restricting the sale and possession of guns would make their communities safer. So it's still a majority, still 56, but down by 4 points. The people who were asked if it's more important to place greater gun control controls on gun ownership than it is to protect Americans' right to own guns under the Second Amendment, that was 64% said, yeah, we prefer safety over liberty or law, which is what they're saying, right? We don't care about liberty, and we don't care about the Constitution. We want to do something that we think will make us safe. Don't know, but we think it will. That's why Benjamin Franklin said, those who will give up essential liberty for the promise of safety deserve neither. And history has shown us that they get neither. But that's dropped from 64% now to 57%. So that's dropped by 7 points. I have a letter here from a donor. I'll just give you his first name because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Douglas. He says, my wife and I have been married for 8 years. We have 3 small children, 1 more on the way. And he's on his way out of California. But as a lead up to it, I'll tell you what he had to say. He said, my family and I are born again Christians. Ironically, my wife and I both studied political science at university, but we've learned much more about government and politics by listening to your show. Well, thank you. Because that is, political science is the science that Fauci knows, that and behavioral science. Additionally, I have a master's degree in education and was in the public school system as a substitute teacher. That experience solidified the fact that school administration is out of control, and I was committed to never subjecting my children, or anyone else for that matter, to the horrendous environment that is public school. And that is our experience exactly. Karen has a master's degree in education. She taught in the schools. She watched, and this was before they got so open about the Marxist indoctrination. She was teaching in elementary school. They didn't have transgender gaslighting going on. They didn't have any of that stuff. But it was just listening and watching because they had open classrooms. The teacher who was next to her abusing and bullying this child. She would say, she was always writing this one particular child. And she would have him do things like stand in a trash can in front of the rest of the class and say he's nothing but a piece of garbage and stuff like that. And so Karen went to the principal and he said, we can't do anything about it. She's tenured. And she said, well, we're never putting our kids in this system. And she got out of it as well. But anyway, yeah. With that commitment, he said, I committed I would never let, would never subject my children or anyone else's to that kind of environment in public school. With that commitment, I walked away from my career in education. And the Lord led me to the electrical utility industry. We homeschool our children, and my wife will soon be giving birth to our fourth child at home with me as her support midwife. That's really good because right now the hospitals are very, very dangerous. We're going to get to that in a moment here. He says, I began listening to shows when I was working the night shift for the local electrical utility. It was a fruitful way to spend long midnight hours. Throughout the last 2 years, I felt a pressing desire to share not only the gospel message with those I encountered, but also the David Knight message, too. So that's good. give them the good news along with the bad news that, unfortunately, I bring along all the time. We need to know both of them, and we need to not be despairing of this. And that's one of the things, I guess, this last year, looking at how afraid everybody was of dying, and they should be afraid, should be concerned about that. What happens after that, right? As Shakespeare said, you know, perhaps to dream or maybe something else. Maybe it's not just a dream. What happens in the next life? So you should think about that. And you should think about the fact that it's not just COVID that you're at risk of dying from. There are so many things that are out there. Many of them have a higher risk than COVID does. And so that's what people need to understand, is that tomorrow is not promised to any of us. And but the good news is that there is mercy and forgiveness and a way that you can start each day new, no matter what happened, and power to get over these types of things that plague so many people, the addictions, whether it's addiction to alcoholism or addiction to gambling. I saw the news article over the weekend about the guy was an athlete. I think it was the National Hockey League. And he's now abandoned his pregnant wife, told her as he's on his way out that he was going to Europe, you know, for a vacation. They said, oh, by the way, they're going to be foreclosing on the house. He gambled away his salary that was tens of millions of dollars a year. He gambled that away at the casinos, and he got so far into debt that she went publicly. She said they know that he's got a gambling addiction. They know that at the National Hockey League. I think it was hockey. And she said, and they're doing nothing about it. And because he got so heavily into debt with them, one of the ways that he tried to get out of it was by throwing games for these thugs running these casinos. So, yeah, addiction can come in a lot of different ways, can it? He goes on to say, when he talks about California, he said, we're currently living in Southern California, and I've recently made the decision to relocate to Montana. The reason I'm sharing this news is because I want to thank you for the truth and encouraging others to seek refuge and to build communities now. Yes, we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength, and we should not let possessions, jobs, or earthly comfortabilities, I guess we could say, earthly comforts, let's just put it that way. It's a hard word to pronounce. Become excuses to live in or to turn out our tents towards Sodom and Gomorrah. These disgusting communities and lifestyles, which are not pleasing to the Lord, do grieve him and twist the minds of his saints. Finally, I'd like to add that although COVID has caused so much trouble, God has used it for good in my life. In the last year, it's been a year of refinement and clarity and understanding. It is now so obvious who loves Jesus, who hears his voice, and who obeys his commands. And it's so obvious what this is all about. And yet the God of this age has blinded so many to the truth. Jesus Christ, our Savior, is the freeing message. Yes, and he has a picture of his beautiful family. Well, take care of them, Doug. I know you will. An Oregon court has rejected a gun control group's challenge to the Second Amendment sanctuary rule. Again, we're back to the sanctuary cities, right? Sanctuary states, sanctuary cities, depending on whether or not it is something that is, they don't even care if it's in alignment with the Constitution typically, but this particular judge did. An Oregon county judge has dismissed a case And this case was, again, brought by lawyers for Bloomberg's Every Town for Gun Safety. And so you had some local areas there that had said, we're not going to enforce any gun control amendments because the local officials take an oath to the Constitution as well. And everything that is done has to be done locally. Again, pay attention to where you live. Pay attention to your local politics. There's too many of those for me to cover. So all I can do, tell you isolated instances of where they made things worse, where they made things better. But to show you what the global agenda is, what these people intend to do, so that you can then counter it locally. But it's going to look different, and there's just too many of these. That's one of the strengths of that. There's too many for me to report on, but it's also too many for them to centrally control. And they were trying to do this. Every Town for Gun Safety, Bloomberg's organization, as well as some others, sued to overturn this Columbia County Board of Commissioners, because there are, outside of the big cities in Oregon and Washington State, they're very conservative areas. As a matter of fact, they want to get out of that state, and they want to align themselves with Idaho in many of these cases. So it prohibits the county enforcement of most state and federal gun control measures. The Oregon Attorney General and lawyers from Every Town for Gun Safety sued them in court, but the judge dismissed the case. He said, while a governing body may seek review of an ordinance, judicial examination still requires a judiciable controversy. So he said it's, I think in essence, he's saying it's too soon for this. Too soon for this. Ammunition shelves, however, are bare as U.S. gun sales continue to soar. Again, the BLM riots. It's the fact that the Trump administration did absolutely nothing, nothing at all, to look at that, to investigate the roots of that, who was behind it. It was something that was not just interstate, between states and across states, that falls into the jurisdiction of the FBI or the Department of Justice to investigate that. They have an obligation to do it. But basically, they took the same approach as the as DACA does with immigration law. They don't care when it's being done by George Soros. And it's more than just interstate. It is globalist. Americans were asked about the January 6th BLM riots, and the results say it all, says Western Journal. The Biden administration is determined to bulldoze through its radical agenda, whether Americans like it or not. But by every measure, from the number of casualties to property damage, the Black Lives Matter riots last summer dwarfed the events of January the 6th. Yet Democrats frame the Capitol incursion as worse than 9/11, and they ignore all the violence that happened last summer by BLM and Antifa. They might be interested in how the American people view the mayhem that left more than 2,000 police officers injured and caused more than $1 billion in damages. A poll conducted by Rasmussen on July the 21st found that 66% of likely voters want Congress to investigate the 2020 riots. It would have been nice to do it when we had a Republican in the White House and Republicans in control of the Senate. Of course, it's not going to happen now. And that's one of the reasons why I think that the Republican Party, especially Trump, threw the election. It's time to do the professional wrestling tag team handoff to the Biden administration to take it to the next step. For both this as well as for the vaccination program. Two-thirds of Americans would like to have answers about the chaos that raged across the country, leaving in its path the division and bitterness that still pervades our society. Only 21% don't believe that Congress should investigate. 13% were undecided. And as I was pointing out before, I have the another letter from listeners. I talked about how California wanted to, and five other states have banned a game computer because they say it uses too much power. Dell's Alienware computer for playing games uses 1 kilowatt. It's got a can have up to a 1 kilowatt power supply. They have it in some configurations where there's less power used. They said that's just too much. Can't have that. And so I pointed out, I said, well, you know, you look at this and since this is a top-of-the-line computer, let's compare it to a top-of-the-line electric car. You know, the Tesla Plaid. You look at the Tesla Plaid, it had, I think, two 250-kilowatt motors. So it's like, okay, well, your peak power there, if you're accelerating, and that's why you buy a Tesla Plaid, right? It's going to be 500 kilowatts. They're worried about a computer that has 1 kilowatt. And then I said, you know, as people are driving these things at a highway speed, even not even you know, accelerating, but just a constant highway speed, they said it was using 260 kilowatts. Now all that, when you look at it, part of that is because these cars are so extremely heavy. These battery cars. I've mentioned before, one of my engineering professors was a little bit of a greenie, but he was complaining about the fact that we would be wrapping ourselves in steel and metal and glass and everything that weighs anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 pounds. He says, "How, as engineers, how do we support something that is that inefficient?" And I said, "Well, it's about freedom." But, you know, you look at the electric cars, and there you're talking about 5,000 or 6,000 pounds with all these batteries. And so when you look at the overall equation, to think that you're going to have a car that weighs 5,000 or 6,000 pounds and it's being sold to us as something that's going to use less energy or be green or whatever, not to even mention the manufacturing process for the batteries and other issues that require rare earth metals. But now this letter from the listener, and he makes another point that's very good. He said, "I thought you would like to know that even the home slow chargers," the slow chargers, these are the ones that are going to charge off of 110. So you can get at home, you can get a 110 charger, you know, 110 volts, or you can step it up to 220, which is like a, you know, washing machine or dryer, which I'm sure they'll ban that as well, right? But you can step it up to that. But the slow charger at home, it varies anywhere from 2.8 to 11.5 kilowatts. And the 11.5 kilowatt version is the 240 60 amp thing. So that's when you step it up to the higher voltage. So that's versus, so anywhere from 3 to 12 times the amount at charging it at home that you would use for your computer. And you're going to be charging it overnight. So this is a long-term thing. That's actually a better way to compare this than what I was looking at in terms of peak energy consumption or even steady-state consumption on the road. The commercial superchargers, he said, seem to go as high as 72 kilowatts. And so what are we going to do? We're going to put, in this infrastructure bill, we're going to put 72-kilowatt charging stations all over California and the U.S., when you've got California and four or five other states have banned a computer that uses 1 kilowatt hour out of energy concerns. So it is a determination to crash the energy grid, but it is also how they are using different standards for everything. There is no equality before the law. There's no equality for their crony capitalism. And why would we expect that? I mean, it's totally corrupt. We would not expect to find that. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with some updates on this toxic medicine that they are so interested in getting each of us to take.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and of course, you can find the news there. They have a lot of different music channels, but you can find the news there. There's a separate tab to click that. We also want to welcome the listeners live at aftermath.fm and the people who are watching the live video feeds at Trovo and DLive. And there's a lot of people who are watching on Twitter live. Again, I don't know. When I look at all this stuff, I look at what has happened. You just heard that commercial, the beeps that are there for those of you who are listening to the program. The beeps that are part of that commercial, I've had some people ask me about that. That's because we were banned by Venmo, banned by PayPal that owns Venmo. At least they told us. Spotify just banned us over the weekend. So when we look at this, make sure you go to thedavidknightshow.com to find out where the show currently is, because that's constantly changing, to say the least. Let's take a look at toxic medicine, because this is what I get banned for. This is the forbidden information, the information that you missed, the information they call misinformation. They just misspelled it. It should be missed information, M-I-S-S-E-D. As Chris Minahan, Information Liberation, points out, you see a lot of stories about a father of five, 39 years old, and they say that he died because of COVID. And Chris Minahan questions that. He thinks perhaps it's medical malpractice. And I've said from the very beginning, what we have here is a pandemic of political tyranny, but also a pandemic of financially incentivized medical malpractice. When you look at safe, effective, and cheap medication that's been kept from people deliberately. And so that the only thing that we're allowed to get is a vaccine. Doesn't that raise huge red flags for everybody? And as he points out, this is being pushed by The Hill and others, the death of Michael Friede in Las Vegas, a story he believes, if you look at the GoFundMe page of his fiance, he believes that this is medical malpractice. He was sent away by two separate ER doctors, refused to treat him for severe sun poisoning and dehydration that could have been addressed with simple $1 IV fluid bags. And so The Hill tweets out the story, says, "Father of five told his family, I should have gotten the damn vaccine before he died from COVID-19. This is the way they put it in The Hill. They said, the father of five died from coronavirus. Jessica Dupreez, his fiancée, said that he sent her a text while he was in the hospital that said, I should have gotten the damn vaccine. He's only 39, she said. Our babies now don't have a dad. You can't say that I'm young and it won't affect me, because it will. According to a GoFundMe launched by Dupreez, Friede first went to the hospital after suffering a severe sunburn while on vacation in San Diego. At the hospital, he was tested for COVID-19 and the results came back positive. Soon after, his condition deteriorated, and within a few days, he was put on a ventilator at the hospital. Now, Chris Minahan points out, had any of these outlets actually read the GoFundMe page, rather than just rewording each other's incorrect articles, they would see what happens to be a shocking story of medical malpractice. Despite getting a severe sunburn and experiencing all the symptoms of sun poisoning, as she pointed out, he was blown off and denied treatment by not one but two separate ER doctors and two separate ER visits, according to his fiancée. She said, we went to San Diego July 12th and 13th. It was to get the kids out of the heat advisory warning that Vegas had, but also because we actually had 2 days off in a row together. But everyone wound up getting sunburned. Mike got it the worst. His skin turned so red that it was almost purple, and he had small water blisters all over. We went to the zoo the next day and then came home. So even though he had that, they went out yet again. Mike called in the next day. He was just too burned and he couldn't really move. Then he called in again. We were putting lotions on him, aloe. He was drinking lots of Gatorade. He was getting chills. He couldn't eat. He couldn't get comfortable. He couldn't sleep. All symptoms of sun poisoning. He went to the ER and tried to get some help or relief. The doctor pretty much dismissed him. So Mike went to work that night. The next day he wasn't any better, so he called in. Then he called in on Sunday. And he's showing no signs of getting better, and he's nauseous. Finally, he goes to a different ER on Monday, and they test him for COVID, and he's positive. They send him home, more or less with a pat on the head and tell him to hydrate, isolate, and it'll be fine. I had to tell my job that I had tested positive. They immediately sent me home, told me, or that he had tested positive, rather, told me that Human Resources would be in contact with me, let me know the next steps. I went home and I got tested, but I'm negative. So nobody in the family got sick from this. But she said Mike was absolutely miserable. He was beside himself. Everything hurt. He was scared. He woke me up about 3 a.m. to tell me that he couldn't breathe and was dizzy. And he tried to stand up and he started to fall over. So I rushed him to another ER. They finally admit him. And they did it immediately. He had low blood oxygen at 72. They said they were surprised he was even able to walk and talk. They did scans on him, found out that he had pneumonia in both of his lungs, and he was placed on the highest level of oxygen the hospital could do. Then, when he was finally given treatment during the third visit, he didn't actually die, though, until they put him in a medically induced coma and put him on a ventilator. And as he points out, we've now known for over a year these ventilators appear to be killing virtually all of the COVID patients. Death rates anywhere from 50 to 85%. I've seen higher on the back end. And so the question is, when they do this, did he have COVID? Did he get pneumonia? Because, you know, he's having chills and probably he can't stand to have anything on his skin. So did he get a bad cold from those 4 or 5 days of sitting there without a shirt on and air conditioning, things like that? We don't know. Right? We don't know. But of course, it is used to scare everyone. Let me give you something that should scare you. This is from studyfinds.org. Actually, I think this is on the Drudge Report, which I think is kind of interesting because Drudge is such a cheerleader for these vaccines now, cheerleader for the pandemic and everything else. But this study says, forget condoms. Scientists have developed male contraceptive that uses magnets and nanoparticle injections. Ooh. Does that sound familiar? That sound like what crazy conspiracy theorists have been concerned about with these Trump shots? Nanoparticle injections and magnets. They said, instead of a condom or a vasectomy, now scientists are experimenting with an unlikely third option, magnets. A team in China. China, of all places. I wonder if they got any NIH funding for this. A team in China has developed a long-lasting biodegradable male contraceptive, which uses injections of nanoparticles and magnetic fields to keep men from reproducing. Oh, how about that? I mean, they just put this stuff right under your nose, don't they? What they do is they inject the nanoparticles, and then they use magnets to guide the magnetic particles down to the testes. And then they heat them up to inhibit the generation of sperm, right? After 2 days of injecting coated nanoparticles in the bloodstream of mice, scientists guided them into position using magnets, and from there they applied alternating magnetic field to the area for 15 minutes. Oh, they radiate you with some, what, was it a 5G frequency? What was it? We can add this to another side effect of electromagnetic radiation, can't we? Yeah, as a matter of fact. Even without the injected nanoparticles, you can add that as a side effect. They said the nanoparticles were coated, wait for it, with polyethylene glycol, PEG. Another coincidence. They said, however, the PEG-coated nanoparticles are not as easily guided with the magnets as the nanoparticles that were citric acid coated. So there you go. I guess the next injections we get from the next version of the Trump shots will be not pegylated, but they will have citric acid around them. This article from Lou Rockwell: if the spike protein facilitates entry of a gain-of-function coronavirus into the cells, then why are we coerced to submit to spike protein-generating vaccines? I'm glad to see somebody else saying that. Yeah, as I say to people, I said, you know, this is not a vaccine, right? A vaccine, what do they do with a vaccine? Very simple. The purpose of a vaccine, since they want to go back and say, well, you know, we had vaccines that helped us with smallpox, and George Washington made his soldiers take it and so forth. Well, it was kind of a hit or miss back then, because it didn't always get them weakened or killed when they would expose your body to that. But again, those vaccines did not have all kinds of preservatives. They didn't have chemicals in them to irritate your immune system. They call that adjuvants. Didn't have any of that stuff. But this is not a vaccine. Think about it. A vaccine is where, in theory, right, you're training the immune system so that it can shut this down when it sees it later on. And yet what we have with this particular case is they are not injecting you with something that is weakened or dead. They're injecting you with the most toxic thing, the spike protein. And they're not just injecting you with a spike protein. They're injecting mRNA to make your body manufacture it. How do you turn that off? Does it ever get turned off? Or does it remain there as a constant challenge to your immune system, waiting for the right opportunity? As he points out, so the public is told the spike protein is what facilitates the entry of gain-of-function mutated laboratory-created viruses into living cells in the lungs. So spike protein vaccines are developed to do what? To create more entry of these viruses into the cell. So why is the public surprised to learn that the COVID-19 vaccinated individuals are getting infected again and again, which is being blamed on a mutated variant? 75% of the new cases in Singapore had been vaccinated. The pandemic has shifted from virus to vaccine. It attacks the blood vessels. And again, I'll mention what I did last week. If you are thinking ahead, you should probably set aside your own blood for your family so that you are not, if you have to have an operation or there's some kind of an emergency situation, that you and family members have access to your own clean blood. Because this is a bloodborne disease now, this vaccine, these Trump shots. The pandemic has shifted from virus to vaccine, attacking the blood vessels. As 40 trillion RNA particles are injected into the deltoid muscle in the arm, some find their way into the blood circulation, reprogram cells on the lining of arteries to perpetually produce the spike protein. And again, that was one of the things that's been revealed in research, the fact that this is distributed throughout the body. It doesn't remain localized in the shoulder where it is sent, but it travels everywhere and accumulates in various organs. And I want to, there's another logical question that arises here at this point. You're injecting a lot. I've not seen that number before, 40 trillion RNA particles. But however many number of RNA particles are being injected, those mRNA particles have to be manufactured. You know, that was one of the things that we were told from the very beginning of this with Operation Warp Speed, that little dog and pony show that was arranged by President Trump, where he goes around the table, he gets all these pharmaceutical executives in, turn on the cameras, let's do a little dog and pony show. How long is it going to take you to do one? Well, it'll take us a couple of years. How about you? Well, we can do it a little bit shorter. How about you, Moderna? And he says, well, we've already got it done. We've already sequenced it. And so all we do is we just inject that sequence into people, and we let their bodies become a vaccine manufacturing facility. Well, okay, but here's the problem. Who manufactures and how long does it take to manufacture this mRNA? He says there's 40 trillion of them in one injection. How did they manufacture all those so quickly? How did they get all that technology? Well, of course, there's a lot of smoking guns leading to the fact that it's looking more and more like they've had this capability for several years. Otherwise, how would you have all four of them be able to do this stuff very quickly? How would they be able to manufacture the mRNA? I don't know how, maybe that is easier than manufacturing and growing the virus and so forth, but they still have to manufacture that and freeze it and give you multiple injections. He points out that'll endlessly produce spike proteins, and it will facilitate the micro blood clots. And I read for you last week, the doctor who was up in Canada, he got fired because he was talking about this in his patients. And he said, you don't see the blood clots with an MRI machine or other scanners. They're too small. They're micro blood clots. You can find them with the D-dimer test. which is typically not done. But if you look at the D-dimer test, you'll see all these different micro clots. And he said he went back and started looking after he had some of his patients die. He went back and started looking at the blood running the D-dimer test. And he found that 62% of his patients that he had injected had these micro blood clots, which have the potential to get worse. Doctors for COVID Ethics, and that's the number four, Doctors for COVID Ethics, are calling the COVID-19 RNA DNA vaccines, quote, an unprecedented medical disaster. They call it a poisonous vaccine and a crime against humanity, and they're demanding that it be halted. Modern medicine responds that the blood clot risk from the virus is greater than that produced by the vaccines. Therefore, the risk is justified. But healthy young people are getting vaccinated, and their loved ones are called to identify their body at the morgue. And, of course, we've been told for over a year that they have zero risk from this. So the risk is not greater for them, for the virus, that is, for the vaccine. Doctors and politicians are overcommitted to vaccines. Halting vaccination would bring down Wall Street, and politicians would lose the controls that they've exercised over the population last year. What is happening is not massive medical mistake. It appears to be more like a crime. The 80 million foolish vaccinated Americans now are berating the remaining unvaccinated, a witch hunt that this writer predicted months ago. But now, how to inform millions of Americans that they've been conned and that their lives are at risk, especially for those unsuspecting Americans who feared the contrived virus scam more than their own government. As we learned from a cardiologist that blood clot problems will continue, high blood pressure will initially ensue. 3 years later, the vaccinated will succumb to right-sided heart failure. Other organs and tissues will suffer the same fate. So you can't even use, as he points out, fast-acting heparin as a blood thinner because it may induce further bleeding. So is there something that can be done? Well, yes. There is. There are some things that mitigate not only COVID, but also this spike protein. Some things that are available, but some things that the FDA, another one of those, is working to get rid of. A prophylaxis enzyme from pineapples, for example. Bromelain has been combined with an off-the-shelf antioxidant, NAC, to inactivate the spike protein. The enzyme plus the antioxidant work synergistically and should be used together. No wonder the FDA has attempted to ban NAC recently. So you take a pineapple enzyme extract and you take an antioxidant that's off the shelf that's been around for decades, just like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, but it is essentially a supplement. We'll talk about some of the other things, but I want to pause here as an aside. I haven't really talked about this FDA trying to ban NAC and why they're trying to do it. Going back to May, FDA attempts to stop over-the-counter sales of NAC as an adjunctive treatment for COVID-19. It was last July that the FDA sent out warning letters to supplement companies informing them that NAC would no longer be available and marketed as an ingredient in food supplements, using the justification that it was also a licensed drug. However, you do have that happening already. You have a coenzyme Q10, which a lot of people use. That is also licensed as a drug. So is vitamin D licensed as a drug. But the FDA so far has not moved to regulate those. So why NAC? Well, it's... many people believe that it was because people started to realize that it was effective in terms of helping COVID. And we must not have any therapeutic, whether it is a pharmaceutical drug like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that have been around for decades, or whether it is a supplement like NAC that's been around for decades. I mean, they were even threatening people talking about zinc, of all things. So NAC has been around for 57 years, and now the FDA has suddenly decided that it needs to be restricted. In this article back in May, they said it's especially troubling as a number of doctors have said that it's very useful in the treatment of COVID-19, especially during the late cytokine storm stage, since it works as an antioxidant and a substrate for the production of glutathione. In fact, there is a growing body of literature on its benefits for COVID. And they reference several of these in the article, and these articles are on the NIH's own site, nih.gov. Last week, this is back in May, Amazon stopped selling all products containing NAC. No absolutely final decision has been made by the FDA regarding NAC, but it might be the third effective COVID treatment that the FDA has attempted to suppress after hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. But it seems pretty obvious, as people have been writing more recently. So that was back in May as it began. Now, these are some articles that have come up in July, why the FDA is attacking NAC supplements. It seems obvious the FDA is clearing the market of affordable NAC supplements in an effort to eliminate competition for the NAC drugs that could be coming to market in the next few years. And they said it's another example of how the FDA is doing Big Pharma's dirty work. In a slew of warning letters that began last year, the FDA targeted a number of supplement companies marketing unapproved cures for hangovers, which the company absurdly considered to be a disease. Some of these products contained NAC. So why is the FDA threatening NAC now? Well, a particular drug company is investigating NAC as a treatment for a rare genetic disorder that damages the myelin sheath, which insulates nerve cells in the brain. And this is the connection to Alzheimer's. Now, remember, at about the same time, you know, about a month or two ago, you had the FDA outraging everybody when they came out and said, we have a scientific advisory panel. They looked at some of the evidence about this particular Alzheimer's drug, and out of 11 people that were on the panel, 11 scientists that have been picked by the FDA to review this, 10 of them said absolutely no. One of them abstained, and this had never been done before by the FDA where they didn't have a single person who thought that this should be approved. They decided they would approve it anyway. Subsequently, three of those scientists resigned, said, I don't want anything more to do with the FDA. And then we found out how much this drug costs. It was in the high $50,000 per year. And as people pointed out, this Alzheimer's drug, if it was going to be widely prescribed at a $57,000 a year, if you're going to widely prescribe that for aging baby boomers, it would bankrupt the insurance industry. Oh, well. Kill two birds with one stone, right? Bankrupt private insurance, make everybody go on government health care, and reward all these pharmaceutical companies in the same way that Trump did last year, tens of billions of dollars. And so at the same time all of that is happening, the obvious corruption and feather bedding and the rotating door between the FDA and these drug companies and so forth, Scott Gottlieb, Trump's FDA director, is now sitting on the board of Pfizer. Trump brought in one of the big pharma CEOs that was his company, Eli Lilly, probably the most had the most political clout up until this last year. But he brought him in to head HHS, right? So when you look at this at the same time, NAC, which has the ability to help to insulate nerve cells in the brain, and one of the things that it is capable of doing is helping people with Alzheimer's because of that mechanism. Also, people who have autism, kids with autism. So they've looked at it there's 50 trials right now looking at NAC as a variety of conditions for autism, for obsessive compulsive disorder, for alcohol abuse, for bronchiolitis, for cardiac arrhythmia, and for Alzheimer's. And so this might have another connection to that very expensive Alzheimer's drug. But nevertheless, whatever is happening, there are some companies that want to come out and patent this. And that is ultimately why they're going to take it down. But it's also a therapeutic that would help so that we don't have to get people vaccinated. And that cannot be allowed. Given these facts, it seems reasonable to assume that the FDA is setting the stage for a new NAC drug to come to market by removing the competition from much cheaper NAC supplements. We called it when the FDA pulled a similar move a few years back when they went after brain health supplements, trying to clear the market for a new Alzheimer's drug then, culminating in the recent approval of that Alzheimer's drug, the one that I was just talking about. Ineffective, dangerous, and unbelievably expensive. CBD supplements may face a similar fate if Congress does not force the FDA's hand by legalizing CBD and dietary supplements. And where did this all come from? Well, back in 1993, I remember it very well, I went to the Libertarian Party convention in Salt Lake City. And at that convention, Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, was there. And he spoke at the convention, and he's a big drug war advocate, but he realized that they were coming after the supplement industry, and that had a lot of businesses that were making money selling natural supplements and other things like that in Utah. So he was trying to defend that. And as he correctly pointed out, you know, we need to work together on issues that we agree on and temporarily set aside some of these things that we disagree on. So they let him speak, and I thought it was right for him to speak. And certainly that was something that we did not want to see happen, was more prohibition of drugs by the federal government. What came out of that, though, that fight between the supplement industry and the FDA, who was fighting on the behalf of big pharmaceutical companies, was a law that came out, the Dietary Health and Supplement Education Act of 1993. And so instead of them, you know, what they wanted, and again, this is another example of the Hegelian dialectic, right? So you have a thesis, an antithesis, and then you come up with synthesis. So the thesis was, we're going to get rid of all supplements. We're going to ban them. We're going to control them all. And then the antithesis says, no, don't do any of that. And then they come up with a compromise which says, all right, we won't ban them, but we'll start to regulate them in a minor way. And that kind of sat there for, you know, 30 years. And now you've got the FDA. They said, well, we'll just change it so they have to do a simple notification. How about that? Okay, well, I'll compromise that. That was what they were after. They let that sit there. Now the FDA has turned that simple notification procedure into a de facto pre-approval process like the ones that pharmaceutical drug companies used to have, except it's worse. It's worse. It's aimed at crippling the supplement industry. Tens of thousands of products could disappear from store shelves. An industry-wide cost of between $2 billion and $165 billion in animal and human product safety studies to comply with the FDA's new protocols. And the loss of between 55,000 and 104,000 jobs in the supplement industry. Now, consider the fact that, as they point out, the guidance imposes safety requirements on new supplements that are not even expected of drugs. When we look at this, you wind up with an amazing inversion of what is happening by FDA regulation in the name of safety. You have vaccines, which are now under the new Trump warp speed rules. They don't even have to go through the testing that should last for 3 years, 4 years, right? 2 to 4 years. So let's just say 3 years. They don't have to do that. They skip that. And again, I'll remind you that even if you, it doesn't make it a long-term test if instead of testing 30,000 people, you test 30 million people for 3 months. That's not a long-term test. That's just a bigger experiment. But it's not a long-term test. 3 months, no matter how many people you do it to, is not a long-term test. And so they're able to skip the testing. They gave them full legal immunity from any damage to people. Then take a look at therapeutics. Therapeutics do have to go through that testing procedure, and they do have some liability, and that's why the companies are getting out of those. Remember a couple of years ago, maybe it's about 5 years ago now, they made the announcement. They said, we're going to stop antibiotics, and we're going to just go to vaccines. And the reason they gave was because antibiotics are being used so widely, and people would begin a course of antibiotics and not finish it, and so then you would have some of the bacteria that had genetically were had the genes that they could resist it, they would be the ones to survive. And so you'd get a more hardened core. They would start to reproduce. And so you'd wind up with populations of bacteria that were resistant to the antibiotics. So we're just going to stop them, and we're going to go to vaccines for everything. Well, it didn't have anything to do with the actual science involved. It had to do with the fact that they had legal immunity from damage for any of this stuff. We didn't get any awards for my mother, but she had a severe life-altering stroke as a side effect for an antibiotic. I never realized that that was a side effect for antibiotics. She had it, they put her on antibiotics after she had a gallbladder operation. And the operation itself was no big deal. It was it was a laparoscopic operation where they just make a little tiny hole and go in and pull out the gallbladder there. So it wasn't a big incision. But they gave her the antibiotics, and the antibiotics gave her a massive stroke the second day she took it. She had some reactions to it the first day, took it the second day. The doctor was not available. We couldn't get any, my sister couldn't get any information from him. Gave her to her the second day. She immediately had a massive stroke. So even the antibiotics have side effects. But now what they're going to do is they're going to take natural supplements, and they're going to hold them up to a higher standard for testing and approval than they do the therapeutics and the vaccines that they're pushing out to everybody. They have absolutely no testing in phase three. This global vaccine, this Trump shot that is being pushed to everybody in the world, no testing. So not even drugs are held to this standard. The FDA says most drugs are prescribed for children have not been tested in children. But they will do that for the supplements now. Supplements are natural. They are not patentable. So if people are required to conduct pre-market studies, they won't be done. And so they won't be approved. That's the way you stop it. So that's what they did, the way they justified prohibiting medical marijuana, CB, for so long, because it was not patentable. Nobody had the incentive to do the studies. As a matter of fact, they had disincentives. They had threats. Don't do the studies, right? But there was no profit incentive in it either because they couldn't patent it. And so now that's what they're doing with the natural supplements. And as all of this is happening, it's now being reported that the FDA may give the Pfizer jab full FDA approval as early as next month, September. Time is getting very short for us, folks, in terms of setting up our alternate ways of living our lives outside of their system. Only Pfizer has submitted all the necessary information to the FDA. Analysts expect that it will be the first to get the green light, says Wall Street Journal. And the FDA is taking a all-hands-on-deck approach to reviewing this. In other words, they're going to make it as fast as they can. I imagine that you've got people in the Biden administration saying, just like Trump threatened them, you get this approved or you're fired. The FDA has permitted, take a look at this drug company, Intella Pharmaceutics. They allowed them to skip phase three trials of a pain reliever. Oh, see, it's not just Trump's vaccines, is it? If you got the right kind of political connections, you can even do it for an opioid. That's what we're talking about here, an opioid. They're going to allow them to relicense this and to get a patent on it. It's not a generic, they said, even though it's going to be based on Purdue Pharmaceutical's OxyContin. So here comes the opioid epidemic part two. But this one, they say, is slightly different. Why? What they did that is different from OxyContin, which is based on oxycodone, they put some abuse deterrent into it. Now, what does that mean? Is it chemically any different from OxyContin? No, none whatsoever. You know what the abuse deterrent is? The abuse deterrent is that when it's designed, whether or not it does this or not, it's designed to prevent dose dumping when mixed with alcohol. And it immediately clumps when it is crushed, pulverized, or hydrated. So in other words, it has physical characteristics that would keep somebody from putting it in a powder form so that people could take it recreationally. But it is chemically the same as OxyContin. And a lot of the people who got addicted to these painkillers were people like Chris Christie mentioned, his friend from law school, who injured his back and was given this as a prescription, and it ruined his life. He lost his job. He lost his family. His wife left him because of his addiction, and he ultimately committed suicide. But these are not people who are looking for a recreational fix. These are people who got addicted by their doctor's prescription, trying to help them with pain. And there's nothing that is any different about this new drug. But they're going to, as Johnson & Johnson and Purdue Pharmaceutical and these other companies were able to get away with a wrist slapping on this, and Johnson & Johnson was able to reposition themselves into the liability-free market for vaccines after their OxyContin stuff, and they were supplying the opioids for Purdue Pharmaceutical. So they were able to, and they're putting up all kinds of legal maneuvers to protect their capital, creating shell corporations so the people who are suing them for the baby powder that they knowingly put out to harm people for decades and the opioids that they knowingly put out to harm people for decades, they're going to now block them from getting any compensation, and they jump into the vaccine market where they have no liability. And now a new company wants to come in with opioids, and the FDA is going to fast-track it for them. And it, chemically, there's nothing that's going to be any different in terms of addiction. A UK watchdog has slapped Advanz Pharma with a massive fine because they hiked the price of an essential thyroid drug by 6,000%. They've hit them with a fine of over $100 million after a more than tenfold price hike on a crucial thyroid drug. And in the Netherlands, the Dutch regulator fined an Italian pharmaceutical firm nearly 20 million euros for hiking their drug price by more than 30,000%. That's right, folks. It is a follow the money, right?
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money! Show me the money!
I have never in my life seen such callous greed as a big pharmaceutical company, the industry. The more you look at it, the more disgusting it is. And their partner in all of this is the FDA. And all of it, their partner. Pfizer and Moderna are hiking prices for their COVID jabs by up to 25% in the EU. Immediately, it starts, right? They're not happy with their massive profits. The Pfizer is forcasting now $33.5 billion in revenue from this Trump shot alone. That is an increase. They've upped their forecast by $7.5 billion from the previous prediction the last quarter. Think about that. That's a big increase. And so it's up by $7.5 billion to $33.5 billion in just what they estimated last quarter versus now. Moderna is forecasting $19 billion in COVID revenue. And think about the fact that Donald Trump paid for the research of these companies. Some of the companies he paid for research, some of them, like Johnson & Johnson, they paid for a factory to put them in business. Some of them, they paid for both of these. And then they bought hundreds of millions of doses for them and said, we'll deliver them and we'll hold you harmless if you hurt anybody. Just think about that. It's just astounding. That's why Trump makes me want to throw up. I despise that casino grifting pervert. Look at what he's done to our country. By the way, I may have to change my clip about Show Me the Money, even though it's mostly the Jerry Maguire character there. We got Cuba Gooding Jr. may have to pay a rape accuser millions of dollars in damages. I don't know if he's guilty or not. But what he did was she sued him for rape. And he did not reply to the lawsuit. Her lawyers are saying that it was an intentional turn down of that. But still, it's the meme, Show Me the Money, that fits, folks. Regardless of what happens, I mean, you know, we got Tom Cruise who's into Scientology. We don't know about Cuba Gooding Jr., but I do know that what we're seeing from pharmaceutical companies is criminal greed. Criminal greed. Murders, blood on their hands, and blood on the hands of Trump and the people like Alex who covered this up for him, covered for him his 40 chests all last year. Give me a break. Israel is going to destroy 80,000 expired Pfizer vaccine doses. The same week, they're going to push more of them out, a third booster shot for the over 60s. See, this is the money, too. Look at what's happening with Israel and Pfizer. So they've got 80,000 of them, even though they are pushing this out and pushing every kind of pressure they can on people in Israel. using their own country as lab rats, probably more than any, well, not probably, but definitely more than any other country. Israel has jumped into all this pressure campaign, the vaccine passports and everything else to get their country to be the highest percentage of vaccinated. They offered to sacrifice their population to Pfizer's greed, saying that we will keep detailed records of everybody for 3 years and we'll give that to you. You know, they'll be the phase two lab rats there. And as part of this, they still have 80,000 of these shots that people refuse to take, and now they're expiring. Just as they're about to inoculate the next wave of the elderly, give them yet another shot. Think about this. If I could get one of these pharmaceutical executives on, I would ask him, you know, please explain to me, first of all, why the two shots? And then why should I test you when you want to have a third shot no more than 6 months later? We know these things don't work. We know they don't stop the spread. They're now admitting that. And that was the narrative just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, about 3 weeks ago, you had Paul Offit out there saying, yeah, I understand. I hear you when you say, it's my life and I should be able to make that determination. If your vaccine works, it protects you. And, you know, you don't have to worry about me. And he goes, but that's not the case because only unvaccinated people can spread this. You can't spread it if you're vaccinated. Well, now we know that's a lie. That whole argument, you got to protect the community. You got to protect the herd because the unvaccinated are spreading this, but the vaccinated don't. We now know that is a demonstrable lie, but nobody is holding them to account. I mean, that is, in my opinion, one of these things like the Wuhan stories coming from Fauci, the gain-of-function stuff. It is an outright lie. Where are the people in Congress calling them out on this lie? So 80,000 unused doses worth about $1.8 million are going to be thrown in the trash as Israel then rushes to buy a new wave of COVID shots to the elderly for a third time, continuing to use them as lab rats. Israeli President Naftali Bennett confirmed what most of us expect, that there will be constant COVID-19 booster shots just like the annual flu shots. And this is how I knew and how I knew that people like Mike Adams knew this. We've covered this forever. We've covered the lies coming from the CDC and Fauci. Every year, they would try to scare people into getting the flu shot. And at the same time, they would ramp up numbers in their database, talking about how many cases they had, how many deaths they had, and it was all pure conjecture. There were no tests being conducted of people who had it. They said, we don't have the time to look at these things. We don't have enough tests. So if it looks like the flu, call it the flu. If it's a cold or whatever, don't try to determine between that. Just say that it is this year's flu. You know, just make a clinical diagnosis. Same thing they did with this. It's been the same MO that they have done year after year after year to get people to take an annual flu shot. The difference is this time they're going to force people. They're going to force people to do it. The same scam they've been running for years, the CDC and Fauci. An information security expert got a hold, they said, of revealed Pfizer agreements coming out of Israel. Said there's a good reason that Pfizer fought to hide the details of these contracts. If you're wondering why ivermectin was suppressed, it is because of the agreement these countries have with Pfizer does not allow them to escape their contract, which states that even if a drug will be found to treat COVID-19, the contract cannot be voided. We don't want treatments. We want to sell vaccines without liability. Information security expert Aidan Biber told America's Frontline Doctors that the first document to recently emerge was discovered by Albanian newspaper Gogo.al. Biber then was able to locate the digitally signed Brazilian contract and at least two others, one with the European Commission and the other with the Dominican Republic. Dr. Michael Yaden looked at him. He says, yeah, it looks very genuine. He noted that what he found, he said, the most stunning revelation was the clause that stipulates if there are any laws or regulations in your country under which Pfizer could be prosecuted, you agree to change the law or the regulation to close that off. Now, I'm surprised that in this article they don't connect the dots back to the stat news item that I pointed out And that was something that was done by some researchers in the UK, and it was reported by Stat News. Stat News is a pharmaceutical trade industry publication. And in that information, they had talked to three Latin American countries who were being threatened by Pfizer. They had conditions, you know, of being held harmless and so forth. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't the type of thing that has been demanded by them for quite some time. It went further for this. For this, they were demanding that there be escrow money set up in foreign bank accounts, like in Switzerland, and that they would be given as escrow sovereign real estate in other countries as well, like embassies and things like that, that they could have, as well as holding them harmless, not just for the design of the vaccine, but harmless in terms of any negligence that occurred because of manufacturing. You know, if it's contamination or faulty manufacturing or something like that, no, they can't hold them responsible for the manufacturing of that way, or for transportation. So all of that looked very, very suspicious, and it was reported, again, by Stat News. This is a mainstream trade publication of the pharmaceutical industry talking about that. And now here's some more. You know, another contract has surfaced that you're going to do things to protect them from criminal investigation. They know. Pfizer knows. Moderna knows. Trump knows that this is criminal, as does Biden. This is criminal, what is being done. These agreements are confidential, but luckily one country did not protect the contract document well enough, so I managed to get hold of a copy of it. Now, going back to some of the things that we were saying before, NAC, got NSA on the mind. NAC, that the FDA is trying to get rid of, that supplement, that is something that, again, used along with an enzyme from pineapple is very effective treatment, even for the people who are vaccinated. Other things that you should be aware of, if you have friends and family who have been vaccinated, resveratrol, which is taken from, you know, wine molecule, blocks every known pathway to COVID-19 infection. Of note, while fish oil and garlic inhibit blood clotting via inhibition of sticky blood platelets, they don't address fibrin blood clots that are found among COVID-19 patients. Enzyme therapy and or resveratrol help to break up fibrin clots, while resveratrol has been demonstrated to protect the very vulnerable endothelial cells that line the interior of the arteries. Excessive doses of it are counterproductive. In a lab dish, resveratrol did not harm healthy cells but inhibited the growth of COVID-19 infected cells by 98%. So if vaccinated Americans want to know if they are truly at risk for blood clotting problems, they can ask their doctor for a D-dimer test. Again, this is coming from the Lou Rockwell article by Bill Sardi. Vaccinated Americans are urged to pressure their unvaccinated friends and families, but what you should do is you should make sure that you show them his article, others like it, that not only give them a warning about what the long-term effects may be, but also give them an opportunity to do something proactive to protect themselves after this vaccination. And this is nothing that is new. You know, we've had people like Joy Behar, people like Piers Morgan out there coming after anybody who is unvaccinated. We know we are vermin, we are dangerous, we're killing people. We've had it with you guys. Now we're going to get tough. And that's what we're hearing everywhere. Now they're going to get tough with everybody. Well, do you want to listen to Piers Morgan and Joy Behar? Or do you want to hear somebody, like we've talked about this going back into May, when you had Luc Montagnier, a French virologist, Nobel Prize winner in medicine, warning people that we were going to see COVID variants coming out, that it was going to actually, the vaccines were going to be facilitating this. He said at the time, he said, vaccines don't stop the virus. This was 3 months ago. Argues the prominent virologist, they do just the opposite. They feed the virus, they facilitate its development, and I talked about this at the time, the phenomenon known as ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement. And basically what this is it occurs when antibodies generated during the immune response recognize and bind to a pathogen, but they're unable to prevent infection. In other words, it's a weak, ineffective vaccine that actually doesn't kill it, but helps to when it binds itself to it, it actually makes it a little bit harder for your body to take care of it, and it actually facilitates this infection. Phase 3 clinical trials of new vaccines are designed to uncover these types of things. It's one of the reasons why they run it for a long time, because this is a well-known factor, a risk factor for vaccines. Many vaccines will produce antibiotic-dependent enhancement, ADE. And so these are people who know that and were honest in telling us that. Luc Montagnier, and also he wrote a letter at the time, a couple of months ago, to the state of Israel and the medical officials there, where they were pushing this so hard. And he said, there's three things here. He said, first of all, there's the short-term side effects that are looking very serious, right? And he talked about some of those. And the second thing, he said, it's the induction of facilitating antibodies. And then he explained, you know, the ADE effect. And then he said the long-term effects. He said, contrary to the claims of the manufacturers of messenger RNA, mRNA, there is a risk of integration of viral RNA into the human genome. Indeed, each of our cells has endogenous retroviruses with the ability to reverse transcriptase from RNA into DNA. And of course, we had a small university just show that. You know, the orthodox dogma is that, oh no, mRNA cannot modify your DNA, it can only copy it. And they said, no, we've demonstrated that in mammals, that it happens pretty frequently, that it can alter the DNA, not just copy it. And of course, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine, Dr. Robert Malone, he was the chief inventor of the mRNA technology, working for the Salk Institute back in the 1980s, and he's been all over media. I'm sure you've seen him. He said, same thing, may make the virus more dangerous. Why? Same thing, the ADE effect. And yet he is being censored and shut down. He says it certainly happened with virtually every other coronavirus vaccine development program, certainly in humans, known in history, and it is what the vaccinologists like myself have been warning about since the outset, and that is the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE. He said the antibody-dependent enhancement seems most apparent in people injected with the Pfizer vaccine. He said we see that protection is waning at 6 months, and what the data seems to suggest is that those who receive the Pfizer are probably the least immunogenic of the three in terms of durability. He went on to say, I think Fauci is being very disingenuous. He calls him a doctor. I refuse to call Fauci a doctor. I'm accused of being an anti-vaxxer, he said now, and I'm accused of promoting disinformation. But to my eyes, the government is obfuscating what is happening here. Yes. Even to the extent of banning podcasts like mine. I don't mean to sound alarmist, but what happens to be rolling out is the worst-case scenario where the vaccine in the waning phase is causing the virus to replicate more efficiently than it would otherwise. So this is the bottom line, folks, and never forget that this whole thing about herd immunity, and we're going to have to, we got to do this for other people, right? It's not enough to say to the vaccinated, well, you got your vaccine, and if it works, you're protected. We know that's not true. So Paul Offit, who has always been a cheerleader, said, well, it's so that you can't pass it to other people. You know, you get vaccinated so that you can't pass it on. That's the basis for which they're trying to mandate this for doctors and nurses who know better. You got politicians dictating to doctors and nurses what medical care and what medications and injections they must have. What an upside-down world this is. The Washington Post said, in some sense, vaccination is now only about personal protection, protecting oneself against severe disease. All right, well, if that's the case, then why can't I make that decision? They go on to say, herd immunity is not relevant, as we are seeing plenty of evidence of repeat and breakthrough infections. Let me repeat that to you. Herd immunity, says the Washington Post. We got to believe it because it's the Washington Post. Herd immunity is not relevant, as we're now seeing plenty of evidence of repeat and breakthrough infections. Therefore, the case for mandating vaccines is not relevant at all. If it's simply about personal protection, then it's my decision. It's not yours. That takes the whole, it takes a village to have public health, and we're going to ignore private health, and we're going to throw private individual health under the bus in order to establish this idea, this false idea of public health and herd immunity. That no longer can be supported. There's no evidence to support it. Not even the Washington Post will support that lie anymore. As ChildrensHealthDefense.org points out, it's now been 144 days and counting that the CDC has ignored their inquiries about the people who are on their VAERS database, the Vaccine Adverse Injury Report System. On March 8th, the defender contacted CDC with a written list of questions about reported deaths and injuries related to COVID vaccines. We have made repeated attempts by phone and by email to obtain a response to our questions, but despite multiple phone and email communications with several people at the CDC, despite being told that our request was in the system and that someone would respond, we have not yet received answers to any of the questions we submitted. It has now been 144 days since we sent our first email to the CDC requesting information. Well, I don't expect that they're going to get any answers, do you? I mean, it's been 506 days since the financially incentivized lockdown and vaccination of the world began by Donald Trump. I don't expect to find any answers for that. We couldn't get any obvious logical answers for 100 days before that. Tens of thousands of vaccine-injured fight censorship to bring their stories to the public. You can't know about safe, effective, inexpensive treatments. Cannot know about that. You also cannot know about all of the thousands of people who have been injured by this. You're not allowed to know any of that. So it's not misinformation, it's missed information that is being kept from you. Some of the places that you can go to find this out, let me give you these websites, C19VaxReactions.com. That's V-A-X. C19VaxReactions.com. There is a Facebook group at the time being with about 57,000 members. COVID-19 Vaccine Victims and Families, if you're still on that, I would suggest you get off of Facebook. VaxLongHaulers.com. VaxLongHaulers.com. We can find some of the information. It's interesting to me that the VAERS body count has now significantly decelerated at the same time that they're telling us we got more people, vaccinated people, who are dying from the from COVID, the Delta variant, right? And again, they don't have the capability to test COVID, let alone a Delta variant. Ask these people who are just repeating this in the echo chamber, where's your Delta variant test? Tell me that you're testing for this. I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe they've got a test. And I know that they're not testing for it. I mean, you look at what's happened to these people, going back again to the flu tests, you know, the flu push and so forth, to the COVID tests, and now you're going to tell me that they're testing all these people to see if they've got the Delta variant or whatever variant it is. That's absolute nonsense, and you know it. But now, after we saw the VAERS deaths, for example, jump by 2,000 one week and 2,000 the next week, after we and many others started talking about that, it's now decelerated, and now for the last couple of weeks, it's only jumped by a couple hundred to try to keep it just under 12,000, 11,940 dead. Not a problem, though, right? I mean, we stopped all the Boeing 737 MAXs when we had 536, I think it was, people die in just two crashes over 5 months. But no, what, 12,000 people dead? We don't care. Full speed ahead. Another 618,000 injured. You know, we didn't have that many people injured and the two crashes. I mean, killed everybody when those planes went down. It didn't have any injuries. But imagine if you had, 24 times that number of people killed with a vaccine for which they have no liability. You know, Boeing could be sued for the 737 MAX, not the big pharmaceutical companies. But imagine if, because there were a lot of flights, there were a lot of 537 MAX flights that didn't crash, a lot of them. Did you hear anybody at the time say, well, you know, look at how many people didn't die. You know, that's the way they approach this. Imagine if they had 24 times the number of people had died in those crashes. Imagine if 600,000, 618,000 people had been injured flying the Boeing 737 MAX. You think they would have cared about that either? And then this was sent to me by a listener, Sean. said, this is from a Forbes story. Listen to this. A Trump-era regulation to exclude compensation for severe shoulder injuries and fainting for vaccines, which made up the bulk of claims, was rescinded by the Biden administration, and Congress is considering doubling the number of special masters who hear cases. Is that an admission that you're now hurting people? You got to have double the number of people to hear vaccine injuries because there's so many of them? And it was during the Trump administration that they put on more protection for the vaccine companies? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They go into some of the details in this case, and I won't go into it, but they said the law shielding vaccine makers and healthcare workers, suits can only proceed if there is willful negligence. Well, you know, if we could get those agreements from Pfizer, I think that would show that it was willful, that it was premeditated, that they knew ahead of time what they were going to be doing, and they wanted to make sure that they were covered not only for mistakes in terms of the design of it, but to be covered for the manufacturing negligence, to be covered for shipping negligence, and to be covered for going ahead with something that they knew was unsafe, that they had criminal liability for, or should have. So we've had 125,682 breakthrough cases in 38 states. They say that's less than 0.8% is what NBC says. But do you realize that that's only when they count cases of vaccine breakthrough? That's not the same as it is for the unvaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, they can give you a test with 5,000 times greater magnification than they give to the vaccinated person. If you test positive, even if you have no symptoms, you are a case. However, if you're unvaccinated and they magnify the viral debris by 5,000 times less, they still don't count it as a case unless you are hospitalized or you die. That's the only time that they count that as a case. You could be sick as a dog at home for weeks, and they don't count it as a test. And they even admit that in this NBC News thing in an indirect way. So while they're trying to tell you, well, that was only 0.08%, then they say, well, it's likely higher since there's nine states that didn't provide any information, like Pennsylvania and Missouri. And they said, and we also didn't get from Florida and a lot of other places, they didn't provide any death and hospitalization totals. Again, I told you, they're only counting for the vaccinated people, they're only counting hospitalization and death. They don't count a positive PCR test, but they do count the positive PCR test for the unvaccinated, and they magnify 5,000 times more for the unvaccinated than they do for the vaccinated. 74% of COVID-19 cases from Massachusetts are coming from vaccinated people. And then finally, before we take a quick break, and I'll come back and give you some updates on some of the mandate status here and also what is happening in Europe in terms of pushback over the weekend. Another big weekend for protests in Europe. Billy Graham's grandson, nephew of Franklin Graham, is widely publicized. He's in his 30s. He's a pastor. And it was widely publicized, and his mother, Ann Lott Graham, was asking for prayer for her son. He was sick. He was in the hospital. They said he had COVID. They did not put him on a ventilator. I did not cover it last week because I didn't want to talk about it. I knew that he would recover. I told Karen, I said, he'll be fine. And we'll talk about it when he recovers. And now he has recovered. And I'm glad that he's recovered. I don't wish any ill to him. But what bothers me about this is that this was being used, again, by the Graham family to push the vaccine. So he's in his 30s. He's got zero risk, really, statistically, from dying from this, a healthy, otherwise, person. He was never ventilated. And yet you have Franklin Graham coming out again saying, quote, I think if there were vaccines available at the time of Christ, Jesus would have made reference to them and used them. I got to say, this is the most ignorant bit of idolatry I've ever seen coming out of somebody who is, by the way, not a pastor. He's a CEO. For an organization. That's what he is. He has since held his ground after saying that. He's continued to push for Christians to get vaccinated. Pew Research Center, which concluded the latest study of intentions later this year, said 45% of white evangelicals told Pew Research that they will not get a vaccine. That's why they've got people like Franklin Graham pushing this. And it's why Jonathan Lotz and his mother are pushing this as well. And then here's another highly publicized Christian, author Max Lucado. He is a pastor at a church, I think it's in San Antonio. He got fully vaccinated. Oh, by the way, so did this Jonathan Lott. Jonathan Lotz, who was in the hospital, he was vaccinated, got it. Max Lucado put out a notification saying that despite being fully vaccinated, he now has COVID. He said on social media, groan, COVID found me, tested positive yesterday, was planning to preach today and then go with some guys on an epic golf trip to Ireland tomorrow. Well, there you go. Lifestyle of the rich and famous pastors. And he gets to go to Ireland because he's been vaccinated. Isn't that nice? Yeah. So he said, COVID found me. No, you found COVID when you injected it into your body. Finally, this letter from a listener along the same line. She said, let's see, I don't know if male or female. I think, let's see, I don't see the signature here. I wouldn't read her name. Oh, yeah, that is Annette. I thought it was a lady. She said, this is a letter I wrote to the Catholic Church after they refused to acknowledge my religious exemption to COVID vaccine. She says, I'm proud for you to share it if you like. She said, several months ago, I requested Father Robert George of the Church of the Sacred Heart, Bethlehem, to sign off on a COVID vaccine religious exemption letter requesting the church to attest to my religious belief that this vaccine goes against my strong Christian morals. But he refused to acknowledge. And again, what are we talking about? We're talking about cannibal medicine. We're talking about whether or not the vaccine used aborted babies or aborted baby cell lines. Whether or not it was used in the manufacture, it was used in the research. And that is true of two of them. It's true that it was used in research for all four of them. Two of them used it in the manufacturing as well. And I guess, you know, when we talk about cannibalism, does it make a difference? You know, you're going to sustain yourself by eating other people, for example, you know, taking their life to do that. Is it different if somebody else killed them for you? And if they gave it to you, not as a fresh kill, but let's say that they froze it, you know, deep froze it, and maybe it's a year later. So they kill them. You need some food. Here's some great meat. It tastes like pork, right? That's what the cannibals in New Zealand said. They called when they would kill and eat people, you know, they'd dig a pit. They'd have kind of a barbecue, and they called it long pork. That's what they called it. But, you know, let's say that your neighbor, you got a neighbor who likes to kill and eat people because, you know, it just tastes great and tastes like pork instead of chicken. So he kills somebody, puts it in deep freeze. It's a year later. I mean, and by the way, you didn't kill the person, right? They killed him. And it's been a while, right? Time has passed. These are the arguments that these moral relativists are using to say it's okay to use aborted babies for our medicine, for our testing, for our development, for our manufacture. It's cannibalism. It doesn't matter that you didn't kill the person. You're encouraging it, you're participating in it by the consumption of that. And it doesn't matter the amount of time that's been involved in it. Does it? Is there a statute of limitation for murder? I know there is for pedophilia. That ought to be changed, but no. Getting back to her letter, she said you know, she wanted them to acknowledge that she, like many other Catholics, have a real problem with this, a legitimate problem with this. They refuse to do it. She said, I also, he refused to acknowledge this. I also contacted the Pope, the Bishop, and another Catholic priest, and they all failed to acknowledge my requests to say that I, you know, she wants a religious exemption, perhaps, because an employer who's trying to coerce her, she doesn't say. She said, I also chastised Father Robert George for promoting the vaccine and the church. He's not a medical doctor, and if he was, he's not my medical doctor. Good for you. I say that all the time. Good. Furthermore, I wrote to Mother Angelica prior to her death, and being a lovely soul, she responded and wrote me back, and she quoted, she said, "Those who tell the truth love you. Those who tell you what you want to hear love themselves." Oh, those are words to live by. That's the words to understand what is happening to our news right now. People who tell you what you want to hear because they love themselves and they love money. Therefore, due to your lack of faith, she said, I had to get an attestation from another church. The Catholic Church needs to repent for their sins and start to teach people the truth. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with some updates on the mandates. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Sometimes your day needs a little smoothing. Check out the Jazz Channel at APSradio.com and the APS Radio app and leave the stress behind.
Mais là, il y a tellement de monde, c'est impossible. Une marée humaine. Bravo. Il y a une maxime philosophique qui dit une échu.
Well, as you can hear, that is France. And if you can see this, you can see the massive turnout of people protesting over this last weekend. And I don't have time to go into all the protests, but when you look at what is happening, it is not just there. It's also in Italy. You had, as you may have seen on social media, Parliament in the Italian Parliament come in with a sign. Supporting informed consent about and opposing the vaccine passports. The police chase him, and he goes running off. This is a guy in the parliament. I mean, this is one of their elected officials being chased by the cops. And as he exits stage right, on stage left come a whole bunch. he's like the red herring, right? He's kind of bird dogs all the cops go chasing him. And now as the cops are gone, there's several dozen of his political party come in holding up protest signs about the Green Pass at the same time. In Germany, where we just had in Berlin, 35,000 people marching in an LGBT protest of Hungary and Poland's laws to protect children from this kind of sexualization and gender gaslighting. So they had 35,000 people show up there to support the LGBT against Hungary and Poland. And it was okay. They didn't care about that. But when you had people show up to protest the lockdown, violence ensued with the police. And they arrested more than 600 people. This is typically of what we're seeing everywhere. In France, as you saw that massive crowd there, they said that we must not be told what to do. This is the moment. As I said last week, These people are running scared. And it is a very vulnerable moment for them right now. We need to shine the light, and this is why the censorship is stepping up. That's why things like Spotify kicking my podcast off. We need to shine the light on the people who are having adverse effects from these vaccines. We need to shine the light on the lies about herd immunity, about the double standards for testing, and on, because right now they're in a very vulnerable position, and they're stepping this up. And one of the things that I wanted to point out, and it was the title of today's broadcast, was the fact that it is imperative for these criminals right now who have, with criminal intent, I absolutely fundamentally believe, and I think people are going to realize that once they see what has been allowed to happen, once they see the blind eye that has been turned to the deaths and to the adverse effects, once they see that in full context, and that is no longer hidden from them, and they cannot keep a lid on this forever, the people are going to speak out. And so it's important for them now to accelerate this, because those of us who are not vaccinated are a control group. And if they get everybody vaccinated, or at least a large percentage of the population vaccinated, then they can pretend that this is just, we don't know how this happened. We don't know how come all the kids are getting autism now. We don't know why everybody is getting fill in the blank. It has nothing to do with our vaccines. It has nothing to do with 5G. It has nothing to do with anything that we did. This is just unexplained. Don't know why this is peaking now. Don't know why we have an exponential number of new cases. Well, if they have a large percentage of the population, if you've got about 50 to 40% of the population is not vaccinated, it's going to become pretty clear that Trump and Biden and the FDA and the CDC and the NIH are guilty of mass murder, that they have blood on their hands. And so they're going to get pretty rough with this stuff. You better believe it. This is not going to be, well, I really think you ought to do it, and here's a nice little prize if you do it. No. Listen to what they are saying in their own words as they talk about this. Trudeau, no more excuses not to get a COVID shot. All the new cases are from unvaccinated people. A blatant lie. As a matter of fact, as I just pointed out, 74% of the cases in Massachusetts are from vaccinated people. 74%. That is much higher than the percentage of people who are vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. Again, he says, it's the unvaccinated and the partially vaccinated who are getting sick right now. And of course, they're also blaming us for all of the passing the vaccine on. De Blasio, the voluntary phase is over. De Blasio is one of these Marxists, and again, this whole thing is about Marxism, just like what is happening in the schools is about Marxism. And so he is on board with this. He doesn't have to cover it up. He can brag about it. He loves it. You know, it's in his nature to do this. The Republicans want to pretend that they don't like this. They want to pretend that they're in opposition, and yet they do nothing. They might name drop a few things like Trump did, but they do nothing. They might hold some hearings, but they do nothing. So the voluntary phase is over, says de Blasio. French hospital union chief calls for mandatory vaccination of everyone. Quote, we no longer have the luxury of half measures. Why? Because they're partners in a financially incentivized malpractice scheme. And because they want to get rid of any liberty. They want to control everybody in every degree. California, the biggest public sector union, is now opposing Newsom's vaccine order. And this is, interestingly enough, where we've seen the opposition. I'm not a big union supporter. I've never, I had to join a union when I was a musician. And I've seen them come after people before I joined the union as a musician when I was playing at Busch Gardens, which was non-union. I saw them come after, as I pointed out before, an accordion player. Poor guy. Couldn't find a job. I mean, this is back in the 70s when you still had live music being put around places. But even then, he couldn't find a job as an accordion player, right? There's not a lot of call for that. So he's playing accordion for the belly dancers that we alternated with and the group that I was in. And they came after him with really stiff fines. And so the union would, kind of thuggishly push that type of stuff. And the people who were at the top of the union just making exorbitant salaries, they're connected with organized crime and everything. And yet we see that in California and in the federal government, It's the unions who are now pushing back on this. This is the first time I've seen unions do anything good since they were initially formed to try to do anything for the people. NFL players are saying, where is the union in all of this? Why aren't they doing anything to protect us with any of this? Well, they were gone. But, you know, the Postal Union, you see in California, the biggest public sector union here, the California Department of Human Resources, objecting to the vaccine mandate. And I hope that they're really genuine about this. Major unions pushing back against Biden's vaccine mandates, the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, no relation to the Donald, signed on to this, right? He's not pushing back, but there's some other ones that are. It's the AFL-CIO, they're going to go along with this, right? You just feather the nest for them. You let them wet their beaks, and these mafia dons that run these unions typically, they will go along with it. And so that's really, we're going to see whether or not these union bosses can be bought in California and in the federal government. So time will tell. We have more to say about this, but we do not have the time as we are past the 3-hour mark. And by the way, when we talk about time, when we have long programs like this, we now split them on BitChute, but you can find the full video broadcast. You can find it on YouTube, on Rumble, and on Odyssey. We just have a problem getting it up on BitChute, but I want to mention that since we have more people watching our channel on BitChute than any other place. But you can find the full broadcast live every day here, as well as you can find it on the podcasts everywhere but Spotify. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.